Hey everybody, welcome to the Revere Radio Network, the worldwide home of free speech. This show is called Nowhere to Run, and thanks for tuning in wherever you found it. If you found it on iTunes or you found it on any of the various Nowhere to Run podcast sites, thank you for tuning in. You can go to our home podcast site, nowheretorun.podomatic.com, and you can get a lot of the information that's going to be presented here. No frills, we don't have any intros or anything this week. We have a very important guest and a very important show for you. It's an interview with Frank Lordy of SalvationRevelation.com. And I encourage you to go to his site, SalvationRevelation.com. He has done some mind-blowing research and come up with a few connections that literally blow the whole roof off the conspiracy world, in my opinion. And I'm a little concerned that nobody's talking about this because it's real obvious. And so for the next 2.5 hours, you're going to have Frank Lordy of SalvationRevelation.com. We'll find out what's under the Great Pyramid of Giza. The ELF connection is so important to everything that we study, all things conspiracy and everything else, but specifically as it relates to the pyramid, mind control, everything. The New World Order's agenda, it's the unified conspiracy theory. Everything falls in once some of these connections are made. So I'll leave you to the interview. Please stay tuned for the next 2.5 hours. You're listening to Nowhere to Run on the Revere Radio Network. I don't know where to begin. I mean, this is really, really huge, all the stuff going on with all this. Let's start with ELF, extremely low frequencies, and let me just first start off by asking you what any particular thing that worries you about it. What is your initial thoughts on that?
Well, my initial thoughts on ELF waves are they're all around us, and we have governments pumping them all around us, and they can be used for so many different things that it's definitely not a plus to have them. I mean, you can do just about anything with them, and they can modify weather with them. They can alter your brain patterns with them. Mm-hmm. Anything in between.
Yeah.
It
seems like it is at least part of the glue that's tying in a lot of what we call conspiracies. It's weird how it just keeps showing up in places that you weren't expecting it, you know?
Absolutely, because, I don't even know where to begin because there's so much stuff involved with it, but everything between UFOs and supernatural experiences and out-of-body experiences and just so many things incorporated into the phenomena of ELF waves.
Well, let's start with, and it goes, let's start with that, about the military projects with it. It just seems like, I mean, I don't know how much you've done on that. We're probably about the same on it, but what have you found on that? What is the interest in the military and, in fact, other governments or agencies?
Well, I guess HAARP would definitely play into that.
Right.
When they use HAARP, they're zapping high frequencies up into the ionosphere, and what bounces back down are the extremely low frequencies, and they use them for all kinds of different stuff, whether it's trying to learn how to intercept missiles or control weather patterns or alter brain function, and a lot of that plays into MKUltra and Monarch and all those different brain control types of stuff.
Which is very interesting in itself that, you know, we have this one application of it, and then here we're looking at a definite mind control situation. But I think that the odd part is, and the reason that it connects into so many things, is because of the, I don't know if spiritual connotations is the right word, but something fishy in that regard. Would you agree?
Absolutely, absolutely. When you're dealing with people, and I don't know what you know about, what is it? I'm not going to have a total brain fart here. What the heck is it called? When they record the ghosts, the EVP.
Right.
When they record EVP recordings and they claim to be picking up deceased people or spirits or whatever they think they're talking to, which are demons, of course, they catch them in extremely low frequencies as well. So what they do is they use special microphones and recording media that can capture the sounds in the ultra-low spectrum. So, you know, you're dealing with all of this different stuff that's technologically advanced, and yet at the same time, you're really, what I believe is I think that they're basically zapping out these beams and saying we're doing it for science, and in reality, you have the New World Order spiritualists that are trying to basically add these spiritual frequencies to the, I don't want to say the atmosphere, but to the core around the Earth.
Mm-hmm.
That makes sense.
And considering that they have this quality, obviously, of some sort of paranormal nature, it is interesting to see the applications of their use in mind control. It appears that there is, you know, even the human brain is some kind of harmonic, you know, resonator of some sort, and that it's down to a science in order to do things like, you know, with the mind control, it definitely seems very prominent in doing a number of things. It seems like astral projection or the ability to kick a astral soul out of a body seems that it could be connected to that. I don't know if I see the connections as, like, per se in, like, out-of-body experiences. I'm still looking. I'm sure they're out there, but certainly in, I guess that's what astral projection is in a sense, but the technical nature of the mind control and how it was used in that, did you find much on that?
Well, the ability, yeah, there are a slew of patents that have been done, that have been created and patented for different technologies that people would either use a chip in a brain or transmit mostly on a smaller scale to like a localized area, emitting these low frequency beams down in order to appease crowds or enrage crowds or, you know, just different crowd under crowd control. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
So it's one of these things that has so many different uses that you're looking at the possibility for something to be portrayed as one thing, but used for something completely different.
It may be possible that, you know, we look at it like it's a technology that has many uses, when probably it's more like that the entire system that we live in, whatever it really is, however the laws of nature are reacting, is it's probably all to do with something like that. It's probably why it seems so connected in every single area, especially the areas that we don't really have good explanations for, is because it's kind of acting on the true laws of nature, you know, in a sense. You know, I mean, I don't know what they might be, but, you know, when you hear of the earth resonating, you know, tones and all that kind of good stuff.
Right, right.
Go ahead.
Go ahead.
Well, I mean, it just, I don't know. I see it as more or less them trying to harness something, you know, and obviously this is a bad use for it. And you know, looking into it, just continuing with this train of thought with it, you were talking about, you know, the crowd control and the kind of, let's call it a basic mind control, not really a specific, more of a broad mind control in that sense. And I think that's why these cell towers, quote unquote, are very interesting. That's something that just hit me today. I've been looking into it all day, and I am concerned that they aren't cell towers. And even if they are put up by the cell companies, I don't know. I mean, I haven't seen anything on it. I mean, it does seem like they're building a grid, and I'm concerned about a number of things associated with it, but I'll probably let that go. I'm sure we'll bring up a lot of that kind of stuff a little later.
Okay.
Any thoughts on the cell towers? Have you any connection of nefariousness going on with that?
Well, like you were saying, I've never actually seen them being built. I've seen them pop up overnight where I never saw anything here before, and yet there you go. I don't know if you've seen them when they disguise them to look like trees. Have you ever seen that?
No, I haven't.
There's one on the main highway here in New Jersey that I've been looking at for, I don't know, probably 10 years it's been there. near a state trooper bunker, and I had no idea what it was. I just knew this is the biggest, fakest tree that I've ever seen. And no one notices. No one ever looks up. And all of a sudden, I saw two more towers go up right near me, and now one of them has this fake tree covering on them. Hmm. It's just really weird. You never see them go up. And yeah, I tend to agree with at least what you're speculating there, that they might be used for cell towers, but I tend to think they're going to be used for something else at some point.
Well, you know, I travel around a good bit, and I mean, I travel in the busy, you know, parts of the country and the non-busy parts of the country. It seems like they're building a grid. I mean, you'll be in the middle of nowhere, and there's without fail one of these towers, you know, at specified locations, like 200 miles at least, you know, but certainly, I mean, not 200, a lot less than that. You know, it's definitely a grid of some sort, but... you know, I don't know. There's lots of speculation involved there. Like I said, I haven't really done a whole lot of information on that. I mean, study on that. One thing that does, you know, concern me, obviously, I've heard your podcast recently about talking about implanting the chip in the troops' heads. I don't think that any of us are, you know, didn't see that coming at some point. But given the idea of this residency problem and what they could be doing with that, what are your thoughts? I know you've done extensive research on it.
Well, what they want to do is put the chips into the troops to be able to get their vital signs immediately, basically just with a card reader. And they can even inject them. They're claiming they can inject them into the troop at the time when they're hurt and then get their vital signs. And I've read at least three or four different comments from professionals like nurses and whatnot. Said that doesn't really make any sense because we already have almost immediate ways of getting vital signs and getting oxygen levels and everything, that wouldn't even be required. But what I found is another article talking, and this is going to sound bizarre, but this is from like the BBC or something, where they're able to now radio control sharks by implanting chips into their brains. And they're going to be sending these sharks out to monitor submarines. So it's as bizarre as it sounds. This is where science is going. And to think that you could say, all right, you know what, it's just quicker if we stick a chip in everybody before they actually see live combat, you basically just have robotic soldiers that are just inputted with, you know, their directives. It's as stupid as it sounds, very much like what was in the last Star Wars movie with the clone troopers, where all of a sudden they're just activated to enact some order. And, you know, God knows what that would be, but, you know, something that would override their impulse to, of thinking logically about something before they actually do it.
Right.
If that makes sense.
Yeah, I think that, you know, we both feel that the chip is more than just a tracking device, and I think that God's warning about it was that, you know, not necessarily that he would give up on you, but then you would, in effect, you know, I don't know, in speculation again, that you would, in effect, give up on him if you got one for whatever reason.
Absolutely. Yeah, when it comes down to you taking it, I don't think that once you've taken it, once you've submitted yourself to the beast, that you're going to be in any way, shape, or form capable of repentance.
And what brings this into a very interesting situation is that when you look at mind control and satanic ritual abuse and the ELF waves as they're associated with sleep paralysis and alien abductions and out-of-body experiences and this new pyramid information that you've come up with, all of this and the Nephilim and everything and the NWO and all that stuff, it's really concerning when you start to realize that this is, in effect, about what they can attach to you spiritually. I think mind control is more or less about what altar that they can stick, you know, attach, layer in demons and other, you know, angels and other beings like that.
Right, and I think that a lot of the sexual ritualistic abuse was done in order to study how to do this, and in order to study what effect it had on the brain, that it actually, you know, this stuff's been passed along for hundreds, thousands of years, where different rituals invoke different, almost, you know, entities or personalities, whatever you want to call it,
sure,
into people. So it was just a matter of them reenacting this stuff under scientific circumstances in order to study what effect it actually has so that they could simplify and master the process in a way that it could be done on a grander scale.
Right, and I think that, you know, when we give men too much credit, you know, in a sense, because I think that whether or not the devil is technically bound or not, I don't know, but even if he is, which I don't know, my gut saying he's kind of got his hands tied technically right now, but he is giving the orders. I mean, when he, you know, he's giving very specific orders at some level to somebody who's passing those orders down to somebody, you know, something else. And
right.
So I think a lot of this stuff just seems too brilliant for men is just that, you know, it's too brilliant for men to think of it. It's too diabolical. It doesn't benefit men, you know, it only benefits Satan, you know. And so, you know, I mean, I guess you could, you know, Satan rewards his, I think, in some ways, too. But certainly it's a deception.
Right. And, you know, that's the biggest problem and the biggest thing that I've come across since I've been, you know, doing my own podcast and stuff, that Christians today do not view the world spiritually. They view the world very simplistically, as they see it on television, as they walk out their front doors, whatever they see, that's reality to them. And we've somehow lost touch with the fact that God is not just some old guy sitting in the clouds that's just waiting to come down and take us up to heaven. You know, there's a spiritual battle going on here, and those that are connected with God, that are very connected with God, are understanding what he wants them to do with their lives. And those connected with Satan, and I mean very connected with Satan, are very willing to just tap into whatever powers they can to do his bidding here. And even if he's bound, you know, they're finding ways to channel demons through them in order to get their working orders. And you've had that since the beginning of the New Age movement back in the late 1800s. I mean, it's gone on long before that, but when that deception began, that was all done through channeling.
Yeah.
And people taking their orders from some divine master or spirit being or whatever you want to call it from some other dimension.
Always, it seemed like, you know, and that's in when you look at history, when you look at everything that we know about everything, when about all this stuff, it always seems like both sides are playing this out through the people that have given them authority to work with them, and I think on the devil's side, it's a lot less it's a lot less obvious, but I think that there are, you know, some people he works through without, in the same way God, I think, you know, works through people that are his that. Haven't technically said, God, you know, I'm yours, do with me what you will, you know, and haven't totally submitted to him in that way. I think he still works through you in the same way, you know, but I also think that there's higher levels on both sides, people that are actively know who they're serving and are following orders, as it were, you know. And I think in ancient history, it certainly seems like the devil, through agents or himself, and I think that when the devil, like, you know, when we see in history and in the Bible, when whatever entity was involved in, you know, embodying the Pharaoh or whatever in Egypt, I think even if it was a high-level entity, I might be confusing that with another one that you were talking about in Ezekiel, but I think that, in effect, he's following the exact will of Satan because he is under direct orders from Satan. You know, it's a hierarchy where you don't deviate from the plan of their master. I don't know. I might have gone off the subject a little there, but you know, it's all about the authority and.
Well, no, I pretty much agree with that completely. What I found in Ezekiel is the Pharaoh being called the Great Dragon. And to me, you know, instantly I'm like, the Great Dragon. And I know that from Revelation, you know, the Great Dragon is the devil, the old serpent, the devil.
Right.
And I mean, you look at these people, they believed that they were indwelt. Yet we just, you know, history writes it off as, you know, these people were just, they pretended to be gods because they wanted power and this was a way to control the people. And now I actually believe that the pharaohs were indwelt by one demonic entity or another. When we look at this stuff, we don't understand the hierarchy of demons, and it's very easy for us to just say everything is the devil, everything is Satan, I don't even know that Satan and Lucifer are the same demon, you know?
Right.
We don't know. We don't know what the which ones are bound, which ones aren't.
Right.
But it doesn't really matter.
No.
You know, they're all of the same spirit. They're all evil and they're all against God.
And it really does come down to, I mean, it's in a sense, who are you going to let indwell you? The Holy Spirit, or any number of other deities. I think that it's all kind of a game on, not a game certainly, but it's all about that. Which one, what are you going to let drive you? And you know, you can, I don't know, I just see it at least maybe not all like that, but certainly a majority of it has to do with that, as us as receptacles for something bigger. But I think that has a bad connotation to some that may be hearing this also thinking, well, you know, I don't want to do anybody else's, you know, I want to do my own thing. I don't want to just do what some, you know, heavenly entity wants me to do. When I think the biggest lie that some people are, that the devil is telling people, is that God's will is not the same as your will. And once you, like, give over to that, you know, and say, you know, I don't know what your will is, but I want to do it, then the veil is totally lifted, and you see that your will and God's will are the same thing, and it's all everything before that is a deception that doesn't make any sense until you make the leap of faith. That's kind of almost why it is a leap of faith, it seems like, sometimes, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. And what you deal with is this whole, you know, you're either willing to submit, and like you said, you know, you find that your will is God's will, or you live under the lie that somehow you're all-inclusive and you, in essence, are some kind of a god, or you want to run your life like you're some kind of a god. But in doing that, that's all that trick, that lie that you can become some higher energy and go on to another plane of existence as, you know, whatever. But, you know, you're living in accordance to what Satan wants. He wants you to think that you're like him, and you can somehow supersede God. You know, it's not about whether or not you're submitting. And to be honest, I'd rather submit to God. And it, you know, if it was God's will for me to do something and I didn't necessarily want to do it, and you have an awful lot of prophets that didn't seem to want to do something that God wanted them to do, but they went and did it, and it was the right thing to do. You know, I'd rather submit to a just God than to, you know, live my own life and think that I'm doing what I want, when in reality I'm just mimicking Satan. And that's just going to be a terminal failure in the end.
Right, and I think the reason that it's a failure, and I think that the misconception almost is that if you don't do God's will, then God's going to punish you for it. I think that that's the misconception in the sense, and I could be wrong about this, but I think that it's more like, you know, God was telling you that, I mean, that we run off of God. We were made to run off God, and we are God, and in between every single atom is God, and we are the same thing. Our will is inherently His will, and it's the natural thing to do, and anything besides that breaks down the natural function. He's saying that the way to best live your life is in this circle of will and love, and anything outside of that is destructive and leads to death. He's, in effect, just warning you and telling people how it is, more than saying, if you don't do what I say, I'm going to be mad at you and punish you. You know, he's just saying, this is how it is, you know, and there's snakes in the grass out there trying to tell you different because they have an agenda all their own. And we see this manifesting with this New World Order. And what you have found out with this is just staggering. Let's move into that just a little bit with the with your, let's call it a hypothesis, with the pyramid and what the pyramid may be. Is there a Reader's Digest version of that, or how should we start with that?
Let's see. Should I just say what I think the pyramid is?
And go ahead.
All right. I after researching this a bit, I believe that there's something underneath the pyramid. I believe that one of these demonic entities is locked in an abyss underneath the Great Pyramid. And whether the Great Pyramid is just a marker, a protection above the opening of this thing, a gate keeping this sealed, or a way of opening that gate to the abyss, I believe that it the abyss itself is underneath the Great Pyramid.
What has been your primary evidence to support it?
All right.
Or secondary, any materials would be great. I know you do.
There's so much stuff involved in this, so just give me a second to get a couple of things up here. Well, first off, the pyramid, as it turns out, vibrates at the same frequency as the inner Earth. It's, again, an extremely low frequency. And where's this guy? There was an audiologist that went there, and he studied the frequencies inside the king's chamber, and he found that when the pyramid was smooth, the pyramid didn't always look like it looks now. You know, we're used to seeing it all weathered and smashed up and decrepit. But the sides of the pyramid used to be smooth, and there's a series of air shafts up at the top above the king's chamber running through the walls. And apparently there are four ceilings in the king's chamber. So this guy, after studying it, came out and said he believes that when the sides of the pyramid were smooth, that when wind blew across the pyramid, it would act as if someone was blowing into a bottle, and it would sound out and basically sing out at this F-sharp, I'm not sure what, I doubt it came out as an extremely low frequency, but at some F-sharp chord wave that would then sound out all across the area. And that ties into all the other pyramids that are pretty much found all around the world. Almost everywhere that they found pyramids, they found instruments that the priests used there that also worked at the F-sharp level. Let's see.
The
King's Chamber resonates at an extremely low spectrum of 30 hertz or less. I'm trying to find the guy's name that did this study.
And the sarcophagus in the King's Chamber as well, I think, rings out a tone when struck. Also,
when you strike it. Well, then you have a long history of people going into the pyramid and spending a night in the King's Chamber, and coming out changed, coming out extremely upset. I mean, Alexander the Great did it, Napoleon did it, Aleister Crowley did it, and we at least know that when Aleister Crowley went there, he was actually attempting to channel these things.
And channeling is the key here. Before we go into some more of that, let's go into the Emerald Tablets of Thoth, and let's explain first, I guess, probably what that is, and the history of that document or series of documents or whatnot. What do you have on that?
All right, the Emerald Tablet of Thoth. There are two separate tablets. One, they believe, came from. I don't know how much people know about Thoth, but there are different legends or myths or histories about this Thoth character, and he's considered to be a function of Hermes, and basically that he came three times to Earth as different characters. One was, I forget what the first one was, the second one was Thoth, the third one was Hermes. And it talks the saying, as above, so below, that you hear tons of the New World Order people
are
involved. That comes from the initial well-known, not that there's actually a well-known tablet, but the tablet that was most handed down. That's considered to be a method of different, what is it called? What is it called when people, when they wanted to change different metals into gold?
Alchemy.
Alchemy, yeah. It was basically a tool of alchemy that was passed down for thousands of years. And like the medieval times, everyone was involved in this. All the different alchemists had a copy of this hanging on their wall. In Tibet, there came another series of tablets. And in those tablets, Thoth talks about coming from Atlantis and bringing this information to Egypt because it needed to be saved they knew that Atlantis was going to be destroyed. So he talks in this tablet, or this series of tablets, secondary tablets, about how the pyramid is built to be left empty, that the sarcophagus in the king's chamber was something that initiates were to lay in, and through the use of different frequencies, they would be able to channel Thoth and enter into the underworld through the pyramid. And from there, they would be given different information from this god, not Thoth, but from an overlord that ruled over the underworld beneath the pyramid.
And there's some huge, like some throne of darkness or something, describes it that. But I think what's also interesting there is that he says, correct me if I'm wrong on this, that he says to basically lay in the sarcophagus, and then there it somehow will be a tone generated, and then you will astrally project to meet him where he'll give you the secret word, and then you'll... how does that process go? I think it may be relevant to what we were talking about earlier.
Right. Well, basically, you're given the secret word, and I'm looking this up now because there's a word for the underworld that it's just not coming to me. Basically, the secret word is the word that you would give to enter into the underworld. So you have to come to Thoth. You have to get in the sarcophagus, channel Thoth. He gives you the secret word, and then you're, in essence, actually projecting into this underworld. Think like Greek myths. Think the river Styx. This is along the same lines. You have to then present the secret word. It's a menti. A menti is the word for the underworld. In order to enter a menti, you have to give this word. And then upon giving the word, they will let you enter. But you have to be pure of heart. You have to have a clear conscience.
Right.
All this.
But didn't he talk about... I could be wrong. Didn't he say like that you had to generate a certain... How did this tie in? Maybe it wasn't this in the Emerald Tablets where he was discussing the one tone and then another tone, and how they interact was important for something. Was that... Did I hear that wrong? Or
no, I think you're right, and I'm trying to find it right now, which I'm sure this is going to be a drain on dead time in your...
Oh, no. We are used to it on this show.
Where the heck is it? I must have like 20 posts on this, so finding this information.
Yeah. In the meantime, let me talk about his post. You can go to his website, salvationrevelation.com, and you can check out all his podcasts. But also, he's a very... This is Frank Lordy. Is that how you pronounce your name?
Yeah, Lordy.
Lordy, and then... I'm getting phone calls over here. Not just the podcast, but an extensive, I guess let's call it Paul Watson-esque in article writing, prolific article writing, at least as far as these subjects were concerned. There's a lot of stuff on this. So salvationrevelation.com. Any other websites that need to be checked out? Faithspeak.net.
Yeah, yeah, faithspeak.net, which is where a lot of my podcast listeners hang out, and a lot more people have joined up, too. Just, it's like a social network type thing, and we post a lot of news stories that are going around, specifically of stuff dealing with the New World Order, and we have people talking about the stock market collapse and all this other stuff going on now, too. So
yeah, so faithspeak.net.
Faithspeak.net. All right, it's got to be in here. I should mention, too, that if you know of the band Lordy, there is no connection between me and them.
Okay.
Just, I don't like to mention my last name because I don't know if you do a Google search, just type Lordy and images, and you'll be in for a treat.
Okay.
where is this? It was definitely a dual tone element to it. I know I read it. I know I said it.
Oh, well, I can edit. I can edit the blank spots here. It will seem.
I'm going to go back to all the tablets and find anything.
I'm sure we'll find it. But the that is extremely interesting about how. And I just want to make sure I was right that he did that. Thoth, presumably, or whoever wrote the Emerald Tablets there, or tablet, whatever, was mentioning that, and the way I thought I heard it was that he was describing a technical way that you resonate a certain frequency in his, you know, language, I don't know how to put it, and then you interject another higher pitched frequency, and then that will somehow induce the astral projection where you actually get to go meet him. And it was more than just like, you know, you read in the Egyptian Book of the Dead about, I don't know, it brings the Egyptian Book of the Dead and the travels on the river Styx and everything into question now. I mean, because, you know, hearing that, and you get taught in school about how just ridiculous it is and how, you know, they just believed some wacky stuff, but that brings into question a lot of stuff when this guy is saying, you know, describing a very technical process of getting your body to leave its home there, which of course brings into question a lot of odd things with sleep paralysis. I know a lot of people have sleep paralysis out there, and it's one of the common threads with sleep paralysis is hearing an odd frequency before it happens, hearing something, an odd buzz, a lot of people describe it as, it's associated with that. But what's unmistakable, the link of astral projection and sleep paralysis, in that it seems like everybody that is talking about sleep paralysis on the internet is linking it to astral projection without any help from, you know, my conspiracy theories. But the way it's being linked is very suspicious, because you have a lot of these help sites for sleep paralysis saying that that's one method of, you know, dealing with it is, hey, let's go on a astral projection while we're having a sleep paralysis episode. And anybody that has had a sleep paralysis episode will tell you it's absolutely terrifying, and you're in the room with something that you don't want to be in the room with, and it resonates evil, and they're telling you to jump out of your body. And, you know, you have spammers going around telling people that are describing their stories, telling them to try astral projection. It's just really odd, you know, how this could have something to do with that, and how it could be associated with the extremely low frequencies, and how this Atlantean or whatever Thoth is telling you the same thing, that it's associated with, essentially that the at least sound is associated with kicking your body out of its I don't know. Maybe I'm not making the right connections there, but it's something similar. Something weird's going on there.
No, I think that as someone that has suffered repeated episodes of sleep paralysis at different points in my life, the last thing in the world that I would want to do is jump out of my body at that point. All I want to do, you know, the times that I remember distinctly this happening, and it happened to me, I don't know, maybe a month and a half ago, the last time that it happened. It is the scariest thing in the world. There's something standing right next to me. I want to get up and either belt it or get the hell away from it. I definitely don't want to let it, you know, just have the ability to jump into my body, what I would be, you know. That's just common sense. You have some kind of a spiritual thing in front of you. You certainly don't want to leave your body wide open for it.
I know, it's absolutely crazy, and I think that it, you know, just while we're just talking about this too, I think that a lot of people kind of, I think sometimes naively, maybe not their fault, I think that there's, just because this story is so much weirder than it appears on the surface, I think that these so-called alien abductions can be written off as advanced sleep paralysis episodes. And you have a lot of experts telling people that, well, you know, in America, everybody had the old hag for so long, which I would interject, whether or not they knew anything about this in the first place, you know, they were all having the same thing. Whereas in a different area of the world, like in India, for instance, it's always a beautiful woman with very dark, evil powers. It's always, I mean, wouldn't you rather have that instead of the old hag? But you know, the weird thing is that it's not, they're trying to associate it with the stories that were told in culture, and that's why they have it, where I think a lot of the people that have it weren't, you know, didn't even hear the stories. It was just the fact that it was there. But now, because it's shifted to a lot of people having the gray alien thing beside their bed instead of the old hag in America, at least, that it's because of the, you know, the cultural, you know, widespread, you know, talking about it, I assume. And so it's just, I think that is the only reason I say it's naive is because, I don't know. there's so much to that that's just so weird. I think you could convince me that alien abductions and everybody that says they suffered for them were multiple personality disorders that may have been for, you know, being messed with by their controllers, or maybe it was part of their trauma-based mind control. You could convince me that a large majority of those cases were either sleep paralysis or even this military ops type thing. But I think that there's more to the story. I think that the evidence doesn't box it in as well as that, and that we have things like, you know, Aleister Crowley and this lamb that they conjured with Enochian magic. Interestingly enough, I ran across something I didn't know about that today. Did you know that, what's his name, Sir, the guy in the 17th century, Sir John Dees, was, I guess, the originator of that Enochian magic, in which Crowley got, I mean, he looks just, I mean, did everything Crowley did. It seems like he was the 17th century Crowley, and he also channeled a very gray-like entity, and gray.
I know that.
I didn't know that either. Actually, I found that in that what I sent to you today, that Fritz Springmeier, and he was the one that had wrote that, and actually, I wasn't expecting that out of Fritz Springmeier. The reason I was looking into that is because of the spiritual connections with the technical aspects of Project Monarch and what they were doing and how they were attaching demons and so on. And I was not expecting that for him to lay that one on me, you know, because this wasn't about UFO abductions, but here's this guy that knows all this stuff about, you know, Project Monarch, just out of nowhere saying basically what I just said. But check right into that John Dees, Sir John Dees. He is a wealth of information, and I know you would it would be right up your.
I have it open. I just didn't get through all of it yet.
Go ahead.
I found very interesting. Well, as far as my own experiences with sleep paralysis, I sleep with my TV on, and I don't normally have the volume on, but I, for whatever reason, sleep best with that flickering light. You're not supposed to sleep with the TV on because that light is supposed to interfere with your dreaming, your REM stage sleep. It's supposed to hinder that. Now, what I found is that all of our circuitry, all of our electrical outlets, also emit EMF waves. TVs, appliances, VCRs, DVD players, computers, everything emits that stuff. So, what is needed? It's what it appears to be needed is that dual frequency. You need a high frequency, and you need the ELF wave. And your brain has trouble because your brain tunes into, it mimics whatever frequency it's being bombarded with. That's how they're able to control it. They can zap you with this beam and basically set your brain into that function. Your alpha, theta, beta waves, functions of your brain, can, you know, they can set them off. They can turn them on. So what I wondered is having this resonance all around us all the time. You know, I couldn't even get into how many different things I have plugged in here. My room looks like a giant nest of spaghetti. Does that make us more susceptible to these things? Does that make us more susceptible to some kind of spiritual interference? Do you know what I'm saying?
Yeah, I think that it very well could be the entire intent of setting up this grid of ELF waves. In a sense,
that's what I think.
Creating a massive portal for at least our perception of them, but certainly, you know, they're probably tired of you having to use us to do what they want on this earth. I don't know if they probably still will, but, you know, or maybe it makes it'll make it where they don't need our will as much. I don't think you can break the will law. You know, with all of the research into the MK Ultra, I don't think you can just have a demon attached to you without you giving it your free will in some way. That's why they have to break your will down with multiple personality and the torture and everything, is to get you to a place where you will accept it. But in regards to that, I think that if it's possible to reduce that, you know, if this is Satan's plan, of course he'd want to set up good conditions for his army. You know, I mean, he's just paving the way, you know, for the hordes. I don't know. I mean, that's speculation, of course, but it can't be denied when you start looking at the stuff that we're looking at that, okay, ELF extremely low frequencies are directly connected with paranormal happenings all across the board. Just about everything you can name is connected to now to ELF. One could make the case, okay, well, it's about our perception of it. Like I know you had done the podcast where you talked about the scientist who had a fan in his wall and he saw a ghost in his room and whatever, and just kind of, you want to tell that story real quick?
Yeah, it was Vic Tandy, and he created the old Tandy computers from back in, I guess, the late 70s. They were precursors to our home computers now. He was working in his lab, and all of a sudden, he felt cold. He felt like the temperature dropped, and he felt creeped out and depressed, and he looked up, and he saw this entity staring at him, and again, this was some kind of a gray spirit, and he couldn't figure out what the heck it was. He stared at it, and the thing disappeared. But he continued to have these supernatural experiences, I guess, for the next night and into the next day in his lab. And he thought to himself as a scientist, well, my brain must be perceiving something that's not there. What could be doing this to me? So he set out to find out if there were any ELF waves in the lab. And sure enough, he had some kind of a fan installed that was rumbling at whatever frequency, emitting some ELF frequency, that once he disconnected it, everything stopped. And so you have, again, the scientist just proving that this is just a scientific misperception of the human mind, as opposed to, you know, a scientific explanation for something paranormal.
Right, and I think that's a misconception that we have today, is that spiritual things don't have any physical counterpart, when I think that under this whatever this cause and effect, actual physical system, laws of nature thing that God set up, I mean, I think that there are components that are probably immeasurable or whatever. I don't know what I'm trying to say, but, you know, I think that there are, you know, the physical and the spiritual are part of the same system. You know, it's just because we don't understand that system doesn't mean that they're separate. I don't know.
Right. Well, the whole lie of science is we need proof. Without proof, there's nothing. We need some kind of a thesis that's provable and repeatedly provable before we can actually believe it. And to some degree, you can have these scientists, and they, you know, they're very clear. They can. The BBC put out an expose on different military applications they were working on, and one of them was this prophet hologram thing they wanted to do. And again, they were going to use ELF waves to basically fool people into thinking they were seeing some kind of a prophet, an apparition, that, oh, look, there's Allah, there's Jesus, there's whoever, by hitting your brain with these waves. But it was written off as, no, that's just silly, why would we do that, in this BBC article. But clearly they can do and redo and redo these experiments where people are, quote unquote, fooled into thinking they're seeing something spiritual, some they call it a religious experience, whatever you want to denote that as is, you know, up to you. But they can do it over and over and over again. But they, instead of saying, well, we're conducting an experiment that's bringing forth something spiritual that we know even less about than any other scientific law, they just write it off as just junk, and it's just our brain being fooled into thinking that we're seeing something.
And
that makes sense.
And we're absolutely surrounded by these waves, whether they are technically active or at their operating frequency or what. But we're absolutely surrounded with this. They, you know, talk about great signs and wonders in the heavens. I mean, what if it's all, you know, I mean, that's one way to do it for sure. Let's travel to Egypt here. Let's go back to the pyramid, and we were basically, you know, seeing what.
Hey, let me interrupt for one second.
Yeah.
I just found something that I wanted to throw in before. I was on Uri Geller's website.
Right.
And I found a report by someone named Jack Hook. And he has this whole thing laid out where they're able to cause out-of-body experiences by using dual frequency ELF waves with a higher frequency.
Whoa, that's intense right there. I mean, that's straight out of the Emerald Tablets there.
Yeah, it's I think they did it to like 40 people, and 20 of them had out-of-body
experience. Oh, my goodness. Oh, man.
They recorded the ELF wave at the same frequency. It's called Schumann's frequency. It's the frequency at which the Earth resonates. And then they ran that, basically stuck headphones on people. They put the ELF wave in one side, and they put a higher pitch in the other.
I'm just astounded. Go ahead.
No, as your brain tries to sync up with these frequencies, it was causing people that never even had out-of-body experiences to go ahead and have them. So I just wanted to throw that out there.
That's amazing. I mean, think of what the devil could do with a tool like that, you know? I mean, if you don't have to put headphones on somebody, and you can, and we have the technology to kick souls out of bodies with the technology that we have now, that Satan is no doubt behind the blueprints with his spectacles on the tip of his nose, looking at something and is like, oh, yeah, go try this. You know, I mean, I'm pretty sure he knows what he's doing. But my goodness, that's like, you know, that's pretty intense, especially when looked in the context of what we're looking at here. And especially, okay, let's take it right back to laying in this sarcophagus, which obviously is what they do at Skull and Bones, you know, whether it's a ritual or it has any significance like that. And I would suggest that probably a lot of the people that are in Skull and Bones are multiples or have been through the satanic ritual abuse system. This whole system is vastly more bigger than you could ever imagine. And most of our leaders, in my opinion, are. Of course, that is probably, you know, my opinion based on some research. But anyway, I think it's important to look into. I think this is all a vast satanic conspiracy. Let's go back there, and we're looking at the dual tones kicking you out of the body in the sarcophagus. Then you are astrally projecting to meet an interval being until you go conference with some super dark entity described with the word darkness more than any other adjective, sitting on a throne and whatnot. I could only guess it, as you say, you know, we don't want to guess who it is, but it's definitely not your average demon. But then again, I don't know that either.
The quote here is, through the dark passage downward he led me into the hall where sit the dark death. Fastest space lay the great hall before me, walled by darkness, yet filled with light. Before me arose a great throne of darkness, veiled on it a figure of night. Darker than darkness sat the great figure, dark with the darkness, not of the light.
Yeah, so, you know, and what...
Sounds like a good guy. You want to go down there and talk to him.
Right, yeah, I'm going to stay the hell out of that sarcophagus in the king's chamber, which leads me to... like, you know, obviously Aleister Crowley probably had his hands on this Enochian type, you know, text, and I'm sure he went, you know, did who knows what inside that sarcophagus. But, you know, I think when you look at the connections of Zahi Hawass, the director of the Supreme Council for Antiquities in Giza, and the guy who, you know, wants to close it down. I don't know. Is it completely closed down? I don't know. I can't tell you how many years I've been wanting just decent news of what's going on the Giza Plateau, just a website that just lays it out. It's so elusive of just somebody saying what's up with it. I mean, I know that a few years back they put this just gigantic wall around it, just imposing, like, a huge wall that nobody could see over, and they called in the name of terrorism and terrorists and everything else. And then they started conducting all this just wacky stuff in the middle of the night, and Zahi Hawass closed it down for any number of, I don't know if it may still be closed down. I know he doesn't want it to be, try to put it on this capstone. So anyway, my point is that I think Hawass is a nefarious figure, and it just, here's an interesting tidbit that Art Bell, for you Coast to Coast listeners, always talked about how he got this private tour of, you know, the pyramid and everything from Zahi Hawass, who, and Art Bell laid in the king's chamber, you know, laid in the sarcophagus and under the direction of Hawass, and he wouldn't talk about what happened, just some weirdness, and he just couldn't explain it. It was so weird, and I could see why. I'm sure you've got something to expand on that, and it wasn't much of a question.
Well, Hawass, what he wanted to do, from what I've read, and like you're saying, you don't really get any one site that just lays it all out. You get little pieces, a sentence here, a paragraph there. Apparently, after they capped the pyramid, he then wanted to close it off forever, which I thought was really strange. I mean, if he wanted to close it off forever in 2000, what would he need to cap it off for first? Why wouldn't he just close it? But he's tied in very much with Edgar Cayce, and there's a lot of speculation that Edgar Cayce may have actually paid for him to go to school and helped him attain his position there.
That's and really weird.
Yeah, he apparently they were using seismographic data trying to locate tunnels because of Edgar Cayce's prophecies about the
Hall of
the
Records.
Atlantean information buried somewhere between the pyramid and the Sphinx. So they were trying to locate these tunnels, and at some point they just, from what I've read, they just basically walled everything off and started digging like crazy. Whether or not they found anything, whether or not they had any reason to start digging like nuts, I have no idea. It might have just been a move of frustration. I really don't know. But there was a good deal of time where they claimed to be installing fans into the Great Pyramid, where, again, it was closed for a long period of time.
Yeah, there's some weird stuff with, like, Bob Bigelow and as a financier and a lot of weird stuff that went down with just the Edgar Cayce Foundation and, you know, people wanting to sue each other over what... I mean, there were a lot of people talking of great discoveries and research, you know, that nobody knows about, nobody's allowed to see anything about. Just a lot of weird stuff. And I'm convinced now that this is... that the people involved in this and have control over the plateau and everything else are Satanists and know the occultic significance of the pyramid and are doing whatever they are being led to do through their rituals, you know? I mean, I think that, in a sense, it's possible, and this is another hypothesis, when Thoth talks of building the pyramid, it seems that he is building this on top of the abyss, the pit, and it's speculated that the pyramid itself was built over a previous ancient site of some sort, because the pit is always described in modern Egyptology as an unfinished chamber that they drilled down there and just decided, oh, well, we messed up. We really messed up here, guys. Let's go back up and try something else, because it doesn't really add up with a lot of the rest of it. And I think it's probably good that we tell everybody what the abyss is in the Bible and what it speaks of about what it says about that. I don't know, I'm just assuming that you got all this in front of you. It's one of the things I'm, like, so bad about, and it's what I pray about a lot, is to understand the word, and that I would be prompted to do like you do and have it just so readily available, and it seems like just on the tip of your tongue. And I so often will, like, just allude to something. Yeah, it's in the Bible. Go look it up, you know. And it's just, like, the most awful thing you could do. But you know, for what it's worth, I do pray a lot about that, and I don't ever, you know, I'm real in my head, even though I don't cite it, I'm careful about it.
No, I'm unprepared here. You know, I feel like I'm standing here naked, because I've got so many different posts with all this information on it, and I rushed home, and you know, I just didn't have it all opened up. But as far as the abyss is from Revelation 9. 1 through 11. You want me to just read it, or you want me to
just
talk about
it? Yeah, I think you should probably read it.
Okay, Revelation 9 begins with, "And the fifth angel sounded, and I saw a star fall from heaven unto the earth, and to him was given the key to the bottomless pit. And he opened the bottomless pit, and there arose smoke out of the pit, as the smoke of a great furnace, and the sun and the air were darkened by reason of the smoke of the pit. And there came out of the smoke locusts upon the earth, and unto them was given power, as the scorpions of the earth have power. And it was commanded them that they should not hurt the grass of the earth, neither any green thing, neither any tree, but only those men which have not the seal of God in their foreheads. And to them it was given that they should not kill them, but that they should be tormented by 5 months. And the torment was the torment of scorpions when he striketh a man. And in those days men shall seek death, and shall not find it, and shall desire to die, and death shall not flee from them. And the shapes of the locusts were like unto horses prepared unto battle, and on their heads were as it were crowns like gold, and their faces were as the faces of men. And they had the hair of women, and their teeth were as the teeth of lions, and they had breastplates, as it were breastplates of iron, and the sound of their wings was as the sound of chariots on many horses running to battle. And they had tails like unto scorpions, and there were stings in their tails, and their power was to hurt men 5 months. And here's the kicker. And they had a king over them, which is the angel of the bottomless pit, whose name in Hebrew tongue is Abaddon, but in Greek tongue hath his name Apollyon. So I believe pit and abyss are just different variants of the same thing.
Right, and it's extremely interesting about the the terminology being used in Ezekiel about, you know, sealing up the cherub who was now correct me if I'm wrong, was he used in the illusion of the same illusion of calling this man was also he was the cherub, the covering cherub, and he was in the Garden of Eden and called the great dragon. Is that all in the same context? Is that talking about the same instance?
There's a string of them. If you go to Ezekiel, I think it's in the 20s through maybe 32. One of them is the one that depicts this cherub being in Eden. And that's not the Pharaoh. That is the prince of Tyrus. And that's something completely off topic, but that's right before the Pharaoh. That's God's okay. Basically sending Ezekiel out and telling him, go to these people and tell them they're done. Their time's up. Their gig is up.
Right.
And there's terminology like the mingled races. And when I read mingled, I think of the fallen angels coming down and mingling their seed amongst men. You know, these are the races of hybrid people, and they're fallen angel kings or princes that are indwelling. They're either incarnate or indwelling some person.
Right.
But you have this Tyrus. When I looked it up, everything says, oh, this is Tyre. This is just like a Phoenician village. And this was an island. And this made me think of Atlantis, honestly, because God's decree was basically, I'm going to sink your island, and it's going to become a place for people to come and fish and lay their nets down. And it happened in stages. It happened where first waves crashed the walls, then they were conquered, and then the island was sunk, and everyone was killed. And this lead god-type person, this fallen angel, is banished down into the pit, along with the trees of Eden. And then after that, you go to Egypt, and he does the same thing. He condemns the Pharaoh, calls him the great dragon, says, your time's up, and then sends in the same Babylonian king to wipe them out. And he said that he would banish the people of Egypt for 40 years, and then he'd send them back, but they would no longer have a prince. And when I think of prince, I think biblically, you have kings, and the kings are usually people, and the princes are like the princes of different what's the word?
Geographical locations. It seems like
yeah, they're geographical locations. I can't think.
But they're not human. They're
word.
Spiritual.
They're
in
not
some
human.
Sense.
They're spiritual princes. These are fallen angels.
Absolutely.
So there's this link between these things being sent down into the abyss, and they're damned. They're damned like men. They have to go down there as uncircumcised, as the uncircumcised. So it's like God saying, and on top of the fact that I'm going to banish you there, I'm going to send you there, and you're going to be just like the people that aren't even my chosen people, and you're just going to sit down there.
And we also have the connection with, in Genesis, after the B'nai Elohim, the sons of God, came down and, you know, basically had the offspring, the purely spiritual entities got banished into, I don't know if the terminology was pit or abyss at that point, too. So there's another instance of that happening.
Right.
And you have different things in Revelations. I think it is, correct me if I'm wrong, I don't know, I think it is in Revelations where he's talking about the four winds of heaven, I think, that were bound, you know, at their, well, actually, no, there was, I think it's and when it talks about the four angels bound to the great river Euphrates, I think when it's talking about the 200 million men marching on Israel, I think that it just alludes to that they were there for a specific time and place, you know, and held there for who knows how long for a specific time and place. So there's geographical locations, you know, if they're bound at the great river Euphrates, he's telling you there's a geographical location where these four evil spirits have been bound to do a specific job at a specific time. And, you know, I don't even know that they're evil, honestly, but anyway, you know what I'm saying? I mean, this apparently corresponds to geographic location, so it's not so crazy to say that there is a place where a extremely high-ranking entity that we may know of is at, and that it is, in fact, this weird monument. It is a, you know, I know Christopher Dunn and other people have written books, The Great Giza Power Plant and everything. Obviously, there is so many anomalies with what is going on in the pyramid, and you can look at any number of, you could just look up anything and find that this is a weird machine of some sort. And I think it does make sense that the whole thing is some sort of key. And I think that the New World Order is obviously venerates the pyramid and the all-seeing eye capstone on top of it. And, you know, I think that it is, I'm not suggesting that I think that the capstone is the thing that unlocks it. I think it's actually probably far vaster of a system that may have to do with, you know, waiting a certain time in an astrological year or in any number of harmonic and capstone and gold and alchemy, I don't know, all of it together. Probably a lot of things have to, I have no idea of the technicality of it, but I think that is something that they're looking to do. Now, I know obviously it seems that from the context, who opens that pit is an angel, you know, that comes from heaven.
Right.
So I think it's almost like they're looking to do it on their own, but, you know, it seems like God's,
not a chance.
You know, God's the one that does it. It might actually correspond to when they actually have what they need to do it and everything, you know, comes around. You know, and I was thinking, one way of looking at that is that if the devil is, or whoever, is sitting under that thing and is able to obviously dictate very specifically any number of things that he can get high-ranking and low-ranking entities to do his will, he probably gave them the exact blueprints and everything to build on top of it so that when the right time came in the solar year and the whatever, you know, happened, that it would be there prepared to do it. And so, in a sense, it can be both his doing and God's will to do it at the particular time too, and he may obviously in his pride think it was him that did it and whatever. I don't know, that's total speculation, but it's one way of looking at it, I guess.
No, I think that makes a great deal of sense. I mean, what else is he going to be doing down there, you know?
Right.
If he can get some dupe up here to, you know, he knows how to unlock it, he's just bound down there, so just get some dupes up here and trick them into thinking that they're, you know, they're going to be tapping into this power and letting their God loose, letting Lucifer out. But, you know, he's got nothing better to do. He's just chilling out. And, I think that he's had a problem right from the beginning where he just doesn't understand his role. And he doesn't you know, it could be what you're saying. It could be that his will is just in accordance to God's overall will. And I think that there's, you know, a good degree of truth in that. But at the same time, he's like a rebel spirit, and he thinks that he's somehow capable of being a god and that he's going to get himself out of there. But yeah, it's not going to happen until, you know, all the keys come into play. Sure, if he gets people to take the steps to put it together, but until God says this is the appointed time, it's not going to happen. And even on that millennium night when they were going to ring in the year 2000 and they were going to cap the thing, I found this to be curious too. The ceremony that they were going to be doing would be capping it in gold for one night and allowing the sun to come up on it the next morning, and then removing the capstone. But they had a laser light show and an electronic musician that was going to perform at a concert there.
I think it was Pink Floyd.
And, yeah, well, I'm thinking, why electronic? Well, you know, you probably can hit an awful lot more low frequencies using synthesizers and things than you can do naturally with natural instruments.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But one of the things they were going to do was on the capstone. And that's when people got outraged.
Oh, yeah? I did not know that.
Yeah.
That was interesting.
And they did it on another pyramid. They went to another, one of the smaller pyramids and did it. They didn't cap it, of course, but they did the laser light show, and they started hitting it with lasers and the eye. And all of a sudden, in came the fog, and they basically had to shut the whole thing down.
And
I found that to be just amazing. It was like, you people are idiots. Don't even think about it.
Right. I think that obviously this sounds fantastic to a lot of traditional Christians, and I think that it should be noted that, you know, the people there, you know, that they are overt Satanists, and this is something that I think that makes a lot of Christians wary to understand this, and that is that there are huge benefits into doing all these things, and as far as they see it. I had an interesting story today where I found out, where my mother, she doesn't know a whole lot about this, but I tell her a good deal sometimes, and she had talked to her aunt or something, and no, it was her cousin, I guess, but my aunt, and she was talking about her dad, who was like a Mason. She knew he was a Mason, and towards the end of his life, he finally didn't want to be a Mason anymore. He didn't want the Masonic funeral, whatever she wants to believe. He converted to Christianity or whatever, but he just was mean, just total mean guy his whole life. Everybody remembered him as mean, but he was, he in effect told her it was satanic or whatever, but he had vast powers. Like he could heal people and heal his wife, and very, very plain healing, like it was obvious. I think God tends to be more subtle sometimes, but the devil, you could tell there's pride in it, in the powers that he gives, and people are indwelt with serious power there. And I just want to let people know that they're, I think that they just think, why would anybody worship the devil? Well, I think that while it is a trick, I think that the devil is using people for their, their bodies and any number of things, and he's probably lying about anything that he says he's going to give them after this world, if he even claims that he's going to give them anything. But I think the rest is a deception. But I think people can't believe it because they don't see any logic in it, and certainly they don't see how big it is, because they just don't, they can't understand it, very religious people really want to bring about chaos so that their Antichrist can come, and they believe in Lucifer and they worship Satan. It's crazy, but it's
right.
True.
I think it's weird that so many devoutly Christian people, parents specifically, will pay attention to what their children are listening to on the radio. I mean, if they're listening to something that has pentagrams all over the album covers and, the lyrics are just purely satanic, they have a problem with that, of course, because it is what it is, But, there has to be some kind of a comprehension that these bands are involved in this stuff, not just because it's cool, but because there's power in it, and because it helps them attain success in ways that they wouldn't be able to have attained in any other way. And, I my mother believed that, and maybe I just came from a strange family. My mother's not exactly normal, but to me, it's like, okay, well, if you can expect that from some dirtbag musician kid, why wouldn't you expect that to go on at the upper echelons of the political world? These people want their power. They're driven by a lust for power. Why wouldn't you expect them to do anything they can do in order to attain their goals? And that,
right.
That might sound strange to, a devout Christian, and I'm a devout Christian, and I think that it makes absolute sense. There are people that are power-driven. And for those that are Republicans, I choose not to have a political affiliation any longer after this current administration.
Which is by design, though. It was intended to make people disassociate with their American government so that they can usher in a world government.
Right. Think about your views of the Clintons. Think about how you view Hillary Clinton. I don't mean to slap Democrats in the face, and I don't mean to slap anyone in the face. The whole thing is a sham, and we all know it's a sham. And like you said, it's just to push us towards wanting world government. But when you look at these people, think about the greediest, most lustful politician that, I don't know what it was like in other generations before now. But think about that one person that you just really despise and you think is just there because they're all about getting power. And what end would they stop at in order to achieve that?
The real rabbit hole here is that, of course, by man's nature, we would probably default and do that. There is any number of businessmen and politicians that are just run-of-the-mill crooked, you know, and that's fine. But they're also, I just wish I could explain how vast the breeding program is that they're raised from and tortured from babies, and a huge number of everybody that you see that is in the media or in the in politics or anything are part of this system, in that, you know, they have a lust for power and they are driven by all this stuff, but they're Satanists, you know, they worship Lucifer, and you know, a lot of them are multiple personality by design through you know, through this, and they, because they're devout in that, a lot of their programming is to infiltrate churches and to poison the perception of Christianity with a lot of the Trinity broadcasting and stuff. And their front altar can be Christian, while, or, you know, some perverted version of Christian, obviously intended to be the paraded around for its perversion and say, look at what Christians are. You know, this is what it is. They are at the heads of these mega churches by design. I mean, you know, the thing about when we go to church, we might be sitting next to, you know, kind of a fair weather Christian, and then maybe, you know, a really devout person, and then maybe, you know, a visitor, and, you know, but when they go to their covens, or when they go to their handler, they don't have a choice because they're being programmed, who they're, and their handler's taking orders from at the top. You know, these people are very devout at some level, and they're being told to go, you know, they have missions to go infiltrate churches. They, you know, if we had missions like that, well, the whole world would be converted to Christ, you know, if we were as devout as they were and getting their plan done and as tirelessly going at it. You know, I think so. It's crucial not to underestimate the power of what the devil's doing in these last days. I have this feeling that because of things that are happening, his empire is just growing exponentially, because his power is directly relative to how many people will let him have a foothold in his life. The more bodies that he has a foothold in, is the more his foot is actually in the world, you know? And I think that that's why it's so dangerous, not necessarily overtly, but things like Harry Potter, you know, it just plays on a kid's desire to have control over the uncontrollable. They see it in this nice package that they'll just be like, well, you know, that sounds like a pretty good idea. I'm going to go pick up a book on magic, and that's all you need to start having the foothold, you know, and it's that's all he requires under his law or God's law or whoever set those down, you know, about what the beginnings of his authority is. And I think his empire is just growing. It's just just growing exponentially.
Right, and you have similar things. And at first, I was really like Harry Potter, you know, big deal. I read Chronicles of Narnia when I was a kid. There were magicians and things in that. And, it, you know, where do you draw the line between what's just entertainment and not? But I think back, when I was a kid, the thing that influenced me more than anything was Star Wars. And I remember being like 5 years old and having seen The Empire Strikes Back for like the third time, and sitting in my room and just concentrating on things, just trying to like levitate these things.
Right.
And I knew damn well at 5 years old, I was raised in a very religious house, and I knew that wasn't something that I should do. That wasn't something that, you know, a power that God would want me to have. Yet I still sat there, and I'm telling you, like, clear as day, I remember this, sitting there staring at books and trying to make them float. And, you know, there's a lot of older people that are, and kids are impressionable too, but there are a lot of people that are of age to go into a bookstore, to get to the bookstore, and like you said, buy a book on magic. Or children that are impressionable, that will lead them to, you know, the next step, and the next step, and the next step. And yeah, you know, it's just all about indoctrination of, you know, you and sinking things into your brain from the time you're a little kid, that this is cool and this is a good thing.
Yeah, and one thing that needs to be noticed with that is it's not all that I'm just a big old fuddy-duddy, that's of the devil, don't do it, you know, it's that, you know, you have a massive campaign with a lot of money thrown at Harry Potter. This was by design to make it the most popular book in the world. It was because they bought media. I mean, they bought front page newspaper ads talking about, oh, everybody bought it out. It's just, you know, they created the hype where, you know, it's a good book and it has a good story, you know, J.R. Tolkien, and the whole idea is solid. But to say that, you know, okay, first of all, you know, to find somebody that could write that in within their system or whatever. I'm not saying that she necessarily is or whatever, but she is the most rich, the richest woman in the world now. I mean, it looks like she got, you know, but the media buying for that and to create the sensation, I don't doubt, this is more of a conspiracy theory, that the book, this is, you know, people are going to hate that I say this, but I think that it could be satanically blessed or something. I think that when you start to scratch the surface of what's happening with the multiple personality disorder and stuff and what they do with satanic ritual abuse and all that's the best network, they grow people, they test, when they sense creativity in somebody, they, and depending on their location, they try to make them screenwriters. And even if they don't want to write screenplays, they tell them in that altar that you're a good screenwriter and you're going to be a good screenwriter. I mean, they use their tools with the people that they have in their system. If you have a talent, then it's going to be used. So to think that all that happened by accident and it's just accidentally the most popular book and this time in the world, while we're being surrounded by all this new empire, this dark empire, and, you know, there's literally nowhere to run from this thing. So, you know,
it's all over everything. It's not even just Harry Potter anymore. I mean, I don't know, you know, you don't watch that much TV now, but my girlfriend has a bad back, so we end up watching a lot of TV. And, I mean, it's in every show. Every show that we watch together has some form of, I don't know, transgenics or...
Yeah,
know,
man.
It's everywhere. You can't put anything on anymore. It's cartoons, everything.
I agree,
That's going to be something... That's something that I'm working on now. I told you I'm working on that.
Right.
I don't even want to...
Right, you know, yeah, that's cool. But I saw the same thing, Dancing in the Stars. I mean, I've never watched TV, but, you know, looking at that, and there's the first thing that I noticed, that here is just a damn show about dancing or whatever, and then their commentators were all psychics for some reason, you know, and one was a different type of psychic. I am a tarot card reader, and I think I give a damn about her steps or whatever, and then it was like, well, I'm a medium, and I, what the hell does that have to do with anything? You know, it's just obvious indoctrination to the fluoride dum-dums. I mean, we got to get off this, you know, this stuff that, I mean, I'm just scared for everybody, because it's almost taking, like, a direct, you know, genius or something to rise above the stuff that they're doing to a, you know, onslaught that they're doing to us right now with the vaccines and the fluoride and the aspartame and everything else and the chemtrails. I was watching something, today, that was an interesting theory about HARP, this extremely low frequency and everything, and the chemtrails and kind of giving these dormant viruses and dormant whatever the hell, I don't know, it could be dormant.
Turning
any
them on, right?
And turning them on with the ELF. And what the hell are we in for? I mean, it's just going to be, whatever it is, there's going to be death in the streets and a lot of it. And, you know, you sent me something that just really made a lot of sense to me. It was Albert Pike talking about the three world wars. Was it Albert Pike?
Yeah, it was Albert Pike.
Oh man, that really hit me hard, talking about the Third World War, and it just, what hit me about it is here he is describing the reasons for all three world wars, and I assume that this was before or right at around the First World War. I don't know.
Before, it was right after the Civil War.
Oh, okay. Damn. Okay. Well, you know, and this is an amazing. I'll put a link to that on the Nowhere to Run Up Podomatic site, but it's so important. And here he is talking about the Third World War's purpose being to just make it so big of a war that it just exhausts everybody. You know, that you are just, that at the end of it, everybody is just needs something, some way out. I mean, so much death, so much destruction in this war that's the ashes that the phoenix is going to rise out of. And here Albert Pike, obviously an overt Satanist, knew what he was talking about when he was talking about the phoenix rising from the ashes. And I think, well, at least Pike was pretty overt about his Satanism and everything else and what the true reasons for it. I'm pretty sure. And so anyway, you know, and that makes me believe of this Gog-Magog war that, you know, is prophesied to happen, and you know, which is amazing when you start to look at Russia and the allies that it was said to have and the allies that Russia is just now making, and we're choosing sides for the Gog-Magog war in which this great deception is going to come out of, because all these things, because the Antichrist will present himself as Jesus Christ that comes after, but he will present the Gog-Magog war as the Battle of Armageddon, and he's going to come at the end with his angels, i.e. UFOs, and be, you know, just counterfeit everything. And, and if you're not putting on the full armor of God here, there's a lot of talk-to-talk Christians that are going to fall for that, you know? And,
Absolutely.
I'm not sure what you think about, like, this idea of, you know, I mean, just any number of things that can fool us on that, just because of what we think we know about end times.
Well, a big part of, here's one thing that's just something to ponder, and I certainly didn't come up with this. I heard someone mention this on another show, on the Steve Quell Q-Files show. Russia goes up to the North Pole now. Now, the invading army is it not under the allegiance to the King of the North? Now we've got Russia at the utmost northern part of the entire world. But yeah, Pike also wrote that this would be a battle between religions, and it would be constructed as such so that people would just be so disenfranchised by the whole idea of religion, be them Christian, Muslim, whatever.
And interestingly, atheism, he said he's going to take care of atheism and religion at the same time. With the Third World War, will actually be against atheism and Christianity.
Right. And I think the idea behind it is just to obliterate that whole region, because throughout time, there's been no control. I mean, Israel, they put them... Reading that, to me, made me think that, okay, World War I was fabricated, World War II was fabricated, the whole Nazi, you know, Jew Holocaust was... I mean, not fabricated, but constructed. It was all constructed. And it was done so in order to put Israel back on the map. And he talks about Israel, and this was at a time when there was no Israel. You know what I'm saying?
Right,
so in 1857, he's talking about Israel, and he's talking about basically an annihilation where these two sides, the Arabs and the Jews, annihilate themselves to rid the world of them, basically, in order to set the stage for a time when that wouldn't come into play and Lucifer could step forward. And like you said, there would be, you know, this destruction of atheism. People just wouldn't, it would be so devastating that people will not know where to turn. And then enter your Antichrist. And yeah, I do believe there's a, you know, and a lot of my listeners on my show can't stand the fact that I talk about UFOs or aliens, and I don't really get too hardcore into it. But at the same time, yeah, that makes so much sense. Then, you know, you don't have biblical text talking about the second coming of Christ being he's just some leader sitting in on the EU. Like, you know, so much of our concept of the Antichrist is he's going to be a king of Syria or, you know, one of these Middle Eastern countries, or he's going to be coming out of the EU. We're told that he's going to come from the clouds. So if he's going to counterfeit that, he's going to come from what looks like outer space. And I think that there is a very distinct threat that this deception is going to be things coming from space and coming down from the sky onto the earth.
And if it's important to note that has doesn't have to do anything with beings from another solar system. I mean, they're genetically engineering all kinds of stuff, and if the Nephilim exist, then we already have, and they apparently do according to Genesis 6, and still exist even after the flood. Then we have here with us spirit/, you know, humans that can be perceived as whatever they tell us they are. But I also think that somehow this Nazi Uberman, you know, thing is tied in, and there's genetic engineering going on at some weird level, and it just, so yeah, absolutely. And I think that even the rapture business, and I've been a very traditional pre-tribulation rapture guy for a long time until really getting into it with this show, and now I'd like to hear your views on it. Mine is more or less that I think that there is definitely going to be a calling up in the clouds before his wrath before some level of his wrath is dished out. But I also don't think it's all that important, except to know that, you know, that it's, you know, it's not just prepare for the worst and hope for the best type thing, I guess is what I'm saying.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. And I think that, like you said, a calling up before his wrath is unleashed. I thought the same. You know, I was really convinced of a rapture, and so I really started getting into my own show. And the more I research stuff, the more, you know, I just, my opinion of it changed to the point where I think my gut instinct is that when he actually does come back, and when Satan has amassed his army to fight God, which is just absolutely the stupidest thing I can ever think of, but at that time, then I think that we will, you know, whoever's left will be called up and to join his army. You know what I'm saying? Like, you'll be part of that. Whether you'll be fighting or just watching, I don't know. But I think that it's not just going to be, oh, we don't have to be here for this. Cool. I could be wrong, and I hope I'm wrong. Absolutely hope I'm wrong.
Well, yeah, and absolutely. And think about, like, if, you know, if a lot of this has been disinformation, consider that some of the information propagated by big prophecy experts is disinformation. What if it is so because there will be some sort of false rapture where, like, New Age gurus get, you know, sucked up into whatever and never heard from again, and then the Christians are standing here like, damn, you know, they had it right. No, they didn't. I knew
that. I never even thought of that, and that makes so much sense because I'm like, well, how could they, if he comes back and people aren't raptured, then the prophecy isn't fulfilled. So how could they work that? That makes so much sense. Like,
yeah,
some.
I heard about that from a panel discussion of what was it called? The conference the guy Malone puts on, Ancient of Days conference, and it was like a panel discussion of all these just brilliant guys that believe, you know, a combination of the Nephilim story, but just brilliant guys, a lot of and different fields of it. And they had brought forth that theory, and it just hit me like a ton of bricks. Like, oh, this is going to be a really good deception, you know? It's going to really suck a lot of people into it. And I think people underestimate the power of the devil's deceiving art, you know? I mean, that's his primary weapon against us, and always has been.
Yeah, absolutely. And, man, I mean, that just knocked the wind out of me completely.
But you know what? What also is scary, but also true, is that really in this whole new system, this whole satanic empire that's growing, me and you, people that understand that they have total authority over evil and have the boldness to exercise it in the situations, and know that they can call a demon out of somebody by using the name of Yeshua. You know, I mean, you can totally have total authority of this because it's your birthright. You were given to it by Jesus. I mean, you were given this name to protect you from the evil one. I mean, it's, and not just that, but I mean, the one who lives in you, the Holy Spirit, is so much stronger than the one who is in the world. I mean, they are so scared of people that have that and know it, that we are truly, me and you and people like us, are the enemies of the new world order. And we're enemy number one. And by us talking about this stuff, it makes us huge targets. But
absolutely, absolutely. I couldn't agree. You know, I don't know if you heard one of my last podcasts, but I was on the phone with my mother, and I was talking to her about 9/11. And, you know, I don't know exactly what your thoughts on 9/11 are, but I was talking to her about how, you know, Cheney had scripted up that, I don't even remember what the name of the document was, but that deal talking about needing a new Pearl Harbor-like event.
Yeah, Project for a New American Century.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. As I'm talking about it, click, I'm like, hello? And she's like, I think your phone's tapped.
Huh.
And, you know, it's 2007. They don't. If someone's listening on my line, they don't need to make a click sound. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
It's just the weirdest thing. So I took out of it, you know, maybe somebody just wants to let me know that they're listening.
But, you know,
frankly,
I was reading today, but with Fritz Springmeier, if anybody wants to really know about this stuff, read some Fritz Springmeier. I think he's one of the true heroes of America, and he's doing time right now and probably any number of brainwashing for bank robbery of all things. But he wrote the book on, he exposed everything about the Illuminati, the mind control, the Satanism, everything. But I knew about him and I read little excerpts from here and there, but I didn't really until recently realize how much he had actually been given away. And I think it was actually a good thing that I didn't really see it until later, kind of like some other things. But what was I talking about, Frank?
I was saying about the phone tap. I don't remember.
Oh, yeah. Okay, let me find that train of thought there. Yeah,
I don't care. Nope.
Well, right, and
we
and
are it, their enemy.
And the whole thing about mind control was that they used fear, and the fear was always rooted in fear of death of some sort. You know, fear of physical death, or fear of spiritual death, or fear of death of your image or something. It was always rooted in that, and without it, they're powerless against you. If you don't have any fear of death, and you understand that. You know, to be absent from the body is to be present with the Lord. I mean, you can't do anything to me, and it doesn't matter what you do to me because of that faith. And everybody should pray for faith and pray for boldness in this, because and understanding and humility and all the things that we need and that God freely gives, because they are our tools to really sticking it to them. I mean, you know, at the end of the day, knowing everything about 9/11, if you're not careful and you don't really know what this is all about, will just lead you to their lie. I mean, 9/11 will serve them just as well as serve a global government just as well as anything else. If you don't know, if you think it's the Jews or you think it's the, you know, Jesuits or you think it's the Masons, when all three of those things have satanic components, you know, it's a satanic conspiracy. This is all about, you know, that Alex Jones commercial, but it's not Alex Jones on his show. You know, this is all about worship. It really is about worship.
And then you've got, you know, what better way to scare the hell out of people than to sacrifice 2,000 people right in front of them on national TV and they can watch it.
Oh, yeah. Talk about mind control. That was mind control right there. 101. But you know, if I know how it's not easy to break free of some of the fear about this. I mean, I know when I first found out about this kind of stuff, you go through things where you get scared of every Google search you do, and you get scared of everything there. You know, you go through different levels of like, well, I don't care about that anymore, you know, and you keep getting, you know, you have to keep finding out that there ain't nothing that's going to happen to you yet. I mean, there is a level, I'm sure, but, you know, we can't be afraid, and you have to take that all the way. You can't be afraid of death, and how do you not be afraid of death is pray for the Holy Spirit to have a wide open area in your body that it can just grow and dwell in you, because it teaches you everything that you need to know about not being afraid of death. If you have the Holy Spirit, the law will be written on your heart, and you'll be led to everything that you need to know. You'll understand very clearly why you shouldn't be afraid of death, even though it, you know, and that is your weapon against them. They can't handle that. They don't have an answer for that, and that's how you beat them. And in a sense that if somebody came to me with a demon in them, or a series of demons, a legion of them, you know, they don't want anybody to know that a person with the Holy Spirit in them has the authority to cast every single one of those demons out of that person. I mean, that is not something that they want people to know, and so it's been suppressed in more than anything else.
You get your Catholic exorcist, or there's no hope.
Right. Yeah,
that's,
I mean,
it's our responsibility to handle all of these things. You know, we weren't sent here to just be sheep. We were sent here to address things. We're sent here to talk to one another about these things and make sure that our brethren are up to speed on what's going on. And it's frustrating as hell to do it. But you have to, you know, I worry more that I'm not doing enough than about my phone being tapped or someone coming and, you know, doing whatever they're going to do. You know, you have my priorities and your priorities clearly are not of self-preservation. They're of getting the message out and sharing and warning our fellow Christians. And everyone needs to be doing that. If you know this stuff, you can't just sit around in a box and go crazy, never talking to people about it, never sharing it. It's your duty to be a light and to hand this out and get this information out to people.
Right, and you know what's really scary, Frank, is that I think that some of the things that we've been looking into lately, me and you specifically, it's a little concerning that nobody has said this yet, you know, that it is so true, yet so not on Google, you know?
Yeah.
I mean, that's
really not.
And I think that one of the things that's just amazing about that, it rings to me that it must be the time where some of this knowledge was supposed to come out. And it's just, it's humbling to think that, you know, you may have stumbled across something that was just the right time in God's plan for it to start to be learned. And I'm sure that maybe people have tried to say something about it before, and maybe that's not why it's on Google. I mean, but, you know, again, if God's for you, who can be against you? And no body or no thing, you know?
No, and, you know, I'm really not the most intelligent person in the world, and I'm not the most well-spoken person in the world, and clearly I'm unprepared to really get into a lot of this stuff as far as the actual quotes and whatnot. But, I mean, it's just a series of connecting dots. I mean, you don't necessarily find it in Google when you search one thing. But what I found was, and trust me, I'm no scholar as far as research, but even Google searches, God will guide you. He will get you the information that you need. Now, I'm putting this stuff together, and a lot of times I don't record my podcast live. I record my podcast, you know, in pieces as I go. I do it all at one time, but, you know, I'll be doing research even more after I've already got everything prepared. And a lot of times I'll stumble on something accidentally that leads me in a whole other direction from where I thought I was going to go.
Absolutely.
And more often than not, those are the ones that I get the most feedback from people on, you know, like, wow, that was just amazing. Sometimes you just can't pre-plan what, you know, God wants to use you for. What He's going to use you as His tool, as His instrument, and you just have to be receptive of that.
Yeah, and that kind of thing always, I mean, that happened to me just today. I mean, just the obvious, it was a very weird situation, but the kind of thing that when I notice stuff like that God is actually concerned enough, I mean, let's just take it into maybe not something that's as important, but something that, like, I meet somebody or run into somebody or learn something that obviously God set up, you know, set up a minute thing in my life for me to learn a little stupid thing. And when I realize that God cares enough about my life and has enough time to spend on my life to make that connection, then how much more is God going to be with me in the serious times, you know? I mean, how much, if He cares enough, if He is for me in that regard, you know, as long as I stay within the will of God and pray, and that's something that constant prayer is to never to be outside of the will of God, because once you're in it and you feel it and you see what's going on, you don't want to be outside. So you start to become, you know, the person, you know, I don't know. It's interesting, but I guess that's the point I wanted to make. But
no, I find that when I was younger, you know, there was prayer time. It was before bed. It was before you ate. Now, you know, I was at a great distance from God for a long time. I really, you know, I never wrote off being a Christian. I just wasn't focused on it, and I wasn't necessarily living a very Christian lifestyle for many years. And, you know, I after 9/11, I started getting really heavy into politics and, you know, studying who stood for what and whatnot. And at some point, I came across Alex Jones, and I don't always like Alex Jones. Sometimes I love what he's saying, sometimes I don't. But it opened my eyes, and it opened my eyes in a way that I was forced, absolutely forced, to submit myself to God and say, God, you know, please tell me what the hell is going on and what you want me to do. And that's pretty much how I got to here. It's just a series of steps. And it's just such a different walk now. I don't feel like I'm ever completely disconnected in the fact that I don't hang the line up. I find myself talking to God, and I don't want to sound like I'm nuts or anything. I'm not. It's like almost like an active prayer. Like, He's here with me all of the time. And I don't necessarily always hear back, but I'm always in some kind of a communication with Him, if that makes sense. You know, I don't feel like there's any moment where I'm not, you know, capable of just saying, hey, you know, whatever, you know, whatever the case is. And I think that's what our walk is supposed to be like. It's not supposed to be like, okay, it's dinner time, everybody hold hands, we're going to pray. Okay, it's time to go to bed, say your prayers, you know?
Right. I mean, I think that it's what he said. I mean, that's what the Holy Spirit is, you know, living in you. And I think that one thing, it does seem like people, another kind of misconception is that God is a busy guy, you know? And I think that in his time frame, he has as much time as he needs. I mean, he could spend every single minute with every single person in the world and still, you know, do everything else he's got to do. I mean, I think that's kind of like a lot of people's idea about, not to bring it too off the subject, people with like aliens. Oh, there couldn't be life on other planets because God doesn't have time, you know? I mean, if, you know, that's just like putting a number on it. Well, God can handle the people on this earth, but few hundred more thousand, you know, he probably would be too much for him to handle, you know. It's
right.
But again, I don't particularly think that that's a you know, whatever. So
no, it's one of those things, and we don't understand time. We, you know, most people don't even realize that time changes when you leave the earth. Time is different in space as it is here, and we don't know anything about what time is like on a spiritual plane. I mean, there might not even be time. If God exists outside of time, then he can, you know, he could be a million places all at once and never have to think twice about time. We're stuck in time because we're on this physical plane. And, you know, we're on like a linear existence. God doesn't have to be on a linear existence.
Right.
That's the whole thing about free will. I mean, how God can know what you're going to do ahead of time and you still have free will. Well, God's not on this plane with us. The Holy Spirit can indwell us, sure, but it's still on a spiritual basis. You know, it's not a physical thing. So, of course, God can know what we're going to do. He's, you know, you take the timeline and you put a point above it. That point is not on the line. It doesn't correlate. And that probably makes absolutely no sense.
Well,
anyone.
No. Let me see. Let me ask you a few questions here. What about the Tower of Babel? Let's talk about that. I think there's something very significant about that. What's your view on that?
It's kind of my view now. But after listening to Tom Horn talk about it a bunch of times and reading a lot of his stuff, the Tower of Babel. Babel actually translates to Gates of the Gods. And, you know, it always struck me strange when I was a kid that we have all these skyscrapers now. And God never felt like he had to intervene in stopping us from building skyscrapers. He never stopped us from sending rocket ships into space. Yet he had such a problem with the Tower of Babel. And Tom Horn really wrote a ton of stuff as far as was the Tower of Babel some kind of a... Not, I don't want to use the term Stargate. He uses the term Stargate. I find that leads to too many connotations between, say, aliens or whatever because of the movie. But again, you'd be dealing with some kind of a spiritual portal between here and these entities that maybe perhaps are locked in the abyss.
Right.
Or just on a different plane that would love to gain access to this realm.
Interesting. And I think it's, you know, interesting, too. Was it you that I heard talking about that the, that some, I think it was where you're talking about that some kind of oddness is happening at the top of mountains and whatnot. And you know, there's a, if you go high enough, it seems like that's where that a lot of the gods came down on top of mountains. And was it you that was talking about that, or did I hear that somewhere else?
Right, I was reading Tom Horn stuff.
Okay, yeah.
All of these, you know, holy people throughout history have gone up onto mountains. When Moses got the Ten Commandments, he was on top of a mountain. And you have this long history of, like, the gods descending upon Mount Hermon and Mount Olympus with the Greek gods. There's always mountains involved in that. And we don't know, you know, what do we really know about other planes of existence? I don't know anything. And I really don't care to know. You know, it's not my place to know. If God wanted me to know, He would tell me. And a lot of people ask me that too. Like, why do you talk about all this stuff? And, you know, this really doesn't play into Christianity at all. Why do you talk about the occult and this stuff in your shows? And I talk about it because, number one, I like to arm people. I look at it like this. You need to be prepared mentally and physically for whatever the devil's going to throw your way. You know, I don't want people being fooled. And I don't, you know, we can talk about UFOs till we're blue in the face. We could talk about anything. It doesn't mean that we're necessarily right. So I like to lay out as much as I can and say, well, just, you know, this is a possibility. That's a possibility. This is a possibility. Do I know absolutely that Satan is bound beneath the Great Pyramid? No, I don't. But I can make an argument for it with different information found around the web. Do I know that there are aliens and that people aren't just, you know, tinfoil-wearing weirdos? No. But looking at the facts, I think that, you know, you absolutely have to take it into consideration. And some of these quote-unquote conspiracy theories really need to be focused on and studied in a lot greater depth in order to adequately prepare for what could be coming.
Yeah, and it's a minefield out there with a lot of this kind of esoteric knowledge and stuff. I think this is so beautiful because it's taking into account everything that all these people are desperately seeking, and nobody has come up with any kind of definitive answer except for, you know, New Age with all these holes in it that don't really logically follow. There's a lot of things that don't logically follow. This theory, or the beginnings of this idea that's tying in all this stuff, is the only thing that effectively ties it all together, that makes it all make sense. This is, I think, the truth that I was looking for all these years, you know? This is where the trail ends, you know? I think it's all making sense. You know, it's something I want to get out of before we leave this subject too much, is when we talked about, you know, different people going on top of mountains and how that may relate to being a part of the threshold where at least the spiritual realm, maybe a boundary or something, is actually literally not too far up there. When it talked about Jesus and his transfiguration going up with a few of his disciples and being Moses and Elijah were there and everything. And what's interesting, I think, about that is that it is the answer to a lot of people's, questions about when Jesus said to his disciples, some of you standing here won't, I don't want to get it too wrong, but won't, shall not pass until they see the Son of Man coming in his kingdom. And I think that a lot of people use that to show, well, that the return of Christ had to been at some point during the life of the, you know, disciples, or there's other theories about that. But I think it's important to note that the very next phrase, the very next line is 6 days later, you know, Jesus took, I think it was two of the disciples and his brother up on the top of the mountain to see this interesting thing happen, this transfiguration where Jesus could be said to, I mean, they saw him unmasked in a sense, within his true glory. And I don't know what the term of coming in his kingdom might mean, but maybe that was his kingdom in that realm and in that area. I don't know, but you know, I think that just makes a lot of sense, and I didn't want to let that go.
Yeah, they also saw him resurrected too.
Yeah,
you know, so it's something my mother asks me to look into all the time. I wish I had a definitive answer to give her, but
true.
You know, it's just I don't know. I'm not even dealing with. What do you think about different translations, different biblical translations?
You know, I think the only safe thing I really know is, and I don't, it's not even that safe, is the King James. You know, I've seen enough in other versions to make me very weary of stuff. You know, because here the New Testament has made it basically unchanged until it got to this recent era. And then we've just done all kinds of crazy stuff with it, you know? I mean, let's go back. And the King James, I think, was at least a valid, you know, and godly, too, and definitely driven by the Holy Spirit, I think. That's what I think.
Right.
And I think the rest of them are not, in some sense. But I certainly am not a King James-only type of person. I think that the Word of God is amazing and has worked its way and can be figured out in just about any way. But I do think that the devil has been an editor on some of those versions, too. And some of the things that specifically call him out regarding this whole idea of you know, I think that the Nephilim, honestly, are a very key part of understanding end times and not falling for his great deception, the deception that will cause the whole world to be deceived unless they are, you know, I mean, so I think that he has edited some of the stuff in there, and it's obvious when you look at the translations. Go ahead.
No, I agree. I even got a different King James Bible because I wanted to be able to write in it, because that's one of the things that I learned at school that helped me to really focus on stuff, is just to write crazy amounts of notes in the text. And I sit down with this thing. I have my mother's King James Bible from when my parents got married. And I'm like, this is not the same. I even have a King James Bible that is not the same as a King James Bible from 1971.
Huh.
But I think that it's one of these things when you listen to someone like Chuck Missler, and he, you know, I wish I had the brain power to actually go back and look at original texts, you know, and look at Greek or whatever language this stuff is in, and be able to come out with so many more enlightening facts about the passages. But, you know, we're stuck reading, and I don't want to say stuck, but we're looking for answers in the King James Bible, where, you know, you probably have to look at the original texts as far as what was actually said, you know?
Right.
How many times am I going to say, you know, like, 60.
Well, no, I totally agree. I think there's that the way the Holy Spirit edited this whole thing, and there's some. I look at the Bible like as a just unbelievably perfect thing. Like it in, I think that it sings songs that we have even no clue about what it's doing. I think it just does any number of very, very strange things, and can be looked at a lot of different ways, as long as it, and even if it is, I don't know, I think when you really look at the context of it, here we are at the end of an age, arguably, where we've made it since Moses came down from the mountain all the way to now, and we can pretty much figure out what God was saying, you know, And I think that is an amazing feat, you know. And when you look at people that argue the integrity of the translations are just simply uninformed, because it is, if they really wanted to get into that argument with somebody who knew what they were talking about, they would get smoked, you know, because it's amazing, the integrity of that translation. I mean, especially as compared to anything else we have, but also compared to the things that are questionable, have nothing to do with the meaning, you know. It very, you know, it's amazing, really.
Yep, couldn't agree more.
Oh,
but, yeah.
Well, let's see here. What else do we got? Anything that you wanted to ask me or anything like that? Any questions of that kind? I'm running out of stuff on my notes here.
Well, let's see. I don't know. What would be something to talk about?
Let's see here. I got a good one here. You were talking about Atlantis and the covering cherub getting banished from the stones of fire. I know that you had seen my what I sent over to you that one time concerning David Flynn's view of the Mars connection and all of the stuff with Lucifer having or Satan having, at some point in prehistory, another kingdom on Mars, and to explain a lot of the anomalies on Mars. What do you think of the anomalies on Mars? Are they real? Could this explanation work with what you're thinking?
I absolutely think they could be real. I don't know that they're real, but why not? You know, who am I to say? And there's so much about space and about history that we have no concept of. And you know, that how much better of a seed for deception, for a coming alien invasion or something, could you plant? Then, well, yeah, we used to be there, we had to leave, so we put you here, and we went far away and let you develop, and now we've come back. You know?
Exactly.
Whether or not he had a kingdom, he very well might have.
True.
I don't know. But I just think that it's you know, go back to like the 20s, go back to the 30s. Where did everyone say the Martians were going to come from? You know? So Mars just happens to have these things on them.
Right.
Pyramid and Sphinx-looking things. And now we send the Phoenix Project thing up to Mars because we really have to get to the bottom of whether or not there's life there. So now we send that to Phoenix.
You know about the Project Lucifer project when they, you know, are exploding huge nukes into planets and whatnot?
Yep.
You know something interesting about that that I thought I might run by you is that it's been, I can't remember where I've seen this or whatever, but some fairly scholarly looking research was talking about how nuclear weapons open momentary, or I can't remember if it was momentary or permanent, holes in some kind of some kind of rift in something that allows some of these dark entities into our plane, and that I don't know if they made the connection to, but every time I see or hear of a nuclear weapon, I think of somebody intentively opening a portal. So it just rings really, really scary when I hear about them blowing huge nukes in places, no matter where they are in the universe. But any thoughts on that?
Why not? I mean, I don't know of anyone that studied the sound frequencies of something like a nuclear explosion, but I would be very curious to look into that. I really think, I honest to God think, that these ELF waves, they open up portals, and a nuke, look at 9/11. I mean, I made my first trip accidentally to Ground Zero about, I don't know, 3 months ago, and I'm in the subway, and, we get out, and I'm with my girlfriend, and we're like, wow, you know, we didn't even realize we were getting off here. And we're walking, instead of going right up onto the street, we were walking through the subways to get to a different exit point onto the street to get closer to where we were going. And there's this big thing at the World Trade Center. It's technically at the World Trade Center stop, and I don't know geographically where it is in accordance to Ground Zero because you're underneath.
Right.
But it's called Oculus. And it's this huge mosaic of eye. It's a giant eye, and in it is the whole world. And I'm like, this is freaking Eye of Horus in the center
right.
of the world, right under the World Trade, right at the World Trade Center stop underground. I mean, this is just, and it's just so weird. You know, we look at everything. God knows how many people walk past that thing and never think twice about it. I'm like, we got to get pictures of this. You know, get your camera out. I got to take some pictures of this. I mean, there's just so much. And it's a vortex. It's considered a vortex, which, again, when I podcasted on that, I started looking into vortex, and that, again, is like, could be a portal. It's this spiraling energy, and, you know, we don't know anything about this stuff. We don't know how these things are channeled or brought into this world, but if the ELF waves are away, when those towers came down, think of that rumble. You know what I'm saying?
Right, man. I'm telling you what, that you are on to something with the connections you've made there, and I think that I think that it's going to lead to other people to see a lot of things. I mean, this is really, really important stuff, and how it relates to all this. I mean, you know, the argument can be made, so what if the devil, wherever the devil is, sure, it's interesting, I guess, if you know where he is, or some super dark entity is, but... You know, it is important. All this does relate, you know. It absolutely relates. I mean, you have to make these connections to understand of what we're dealing with here, because to really be armed with the information that this stuff exists and that there might be this, and, I mean, we got to arm ourselves intellectually from a deception that's going to just rock everything. And we're going to... And to think that it's just going to happen, like you say, you know, the Antichrist was sitting on a board at the European Union where... You know, this is going to be at the end of a very devastating war where there's going to be death everywhere, and we're about to go through a time where a lot of dying is going to happen. And I'm not saying that I don't think in my heart of hearts that there's going to be any kind of rapture beforehand. And it's nothing new. I mean, people have died horrible deaths for a long time, but this is different. This is big, and your very soul is at risk unless we are really, really aware of this. And I think you don't have to know it, as long as you know God and you know and you ask the Holy Spirit to guide you in the Word, and just to understand what the Holy Spirit would have you know, because you don't have to know this, but you do need to be strong in your faith. And without And I think that people are going to have to, like, rely on God for everything. There's going to be a need for manna, you know. I mean, we're going to have super faith in these times, and we have to really, truly believe that God can provide us with manna, bread from heaven. Because if we don't really have that kind of faith, I mean, I don't know how much hope there is for us, because there's not a lot of hope on the horizon. I don't see any way to survive this. Honestly, I don't see how we can avoid ELF waves. I don't see how we can avoid the grid of this problem. I don't see how we can avoid chemtrails. I don't see how we can avoid the police state, the cameras. I don't see how we can buy or sell without a mark of the beast. I don't know about you, but there's too many people and there's not enough woods around here. I know you're in Jersey, and I know that, where is there to go?
But, at the same time, number one, it's your responsibility to be wearing the full armor of God at all times to avoid being struck by fiery darts or ELF waves. You know, I don't think that God's just going to allow people to turn on something that's going to knock everyone out of their bodies. Not his chosen, anyway.
Right.
And, it's our responsibility to not say, well, you know what, I give up. This is going to happen anyway. This is just prophecy. Yeah, it's prophecy. Yeah, when the appointed time comes, there will be nothing we can do to stop it. But in the meantime, we need to be praying. We need to be looking for ways, at least, to put it off. It may well be that this is the time that it's going to happen, and if that's the time that it's going to happen, then we have to just deal with it. But at the same time, it's our responsibility to be praying for God for guidance, because we don't know that this is now. We don't know that this isn't in 10 years or 15 years. You know, we don't know. But it's definitely getting closer, and it's getting closer very quickly.
And a good illustration of that you actually have to do something about it is with the food supply. I mean, we're at war in a sense. I mean, if you were at a war, you wouldn't walk into flying bullets. You know, just there would be general self-preservation. And if you didn't know that bullets were flying, well, then you're just out of luck, because they really are flying. You know, I mean, I think that if you don't know that the water's poisoned and a lot of the food is poisoned deliberately and the vaccines, and you don't try to actively avoid this, then, it's very insidious stuff, because it's not on the news, you know?
No, of course not.
And what do you...
I'm sorry.
I was going to say, what do you do as far as eating? How do you, how do you view it, and what kind of steps do you take as far as that, just so people know about that?
I view it as extremely important. I view it as something that everyone needs to be concerned with. And my eating habits are, let's say I'm on the fast track to a cardiovascular episode.
Oh, no.
I, honestly, I'm not well off financially, and I tend to eat as cheaply as I can, which means everything that I should not be eating. And it's something that I tell myself every day as I eat like one meal a day. As I eat my one meal, that I shouldn't be eating this, I shouldn't be doing this, and I do it repeatedly over and over and over again. And I tell my girlfriend over and over, next week I'm going to stop eating this crap. And I had myself a nice giant Wendy's hamburger tonight.
Well, I think it's time to get off the grid, man. I mean, you can cheaply enjoy a lot of stuff, but the thing about fast food is that I think it's a direct delivery system for a lot of the stuff that they're trying to do. I know
it's on so many levels,
but I think that it's also important. I didn't realize how important it was. One of the things I'm awfully concerned about the meat problem there, but I'm really the constant influx of MSG, which I didn't realize was the alternative to aspartame as far as excitotoxins. There's only really two main ones, and they've got it in everything. Basically, anything that's not sweet has MSG in it, as far as distributed by the New World Order. It's an excitotoxin. It literally puts holes in your brain and makes serious neurological problems, and fast food places are very liberal with it. Got to get off that grid, man. I know it's hard, and Wendy's is cheap, but that's all by design. Can't Can't let them have you. And especially important to get off the fluoride thing. I mean, it's in everything. It's very tough to avoid. And even if you're drinking coffee from the gas station, think of it. It Cokes from fountain drinks. I mean, it's all running city water, and it's calcifying your pineal gland, which is arguably connecting you to some level of spirituality. You know, I mean, that's the attack here. I mean, it's not just fluoride's a very insidious thing because it doesn't just do one particular thing. But one good thing that it does is calcifies the pineal gland, which is very important as far as a lot of your spiritual thinking. I hear, anyway. I'm no doctor.
No, so you know what? You check back with me. Check back with me in a month and ask me again, because I really need to feel some pressure, you know? It's one of these things, you know, everybody has a vice, and it's not even like it's my vice, it's just laziness. And, Rodney will talk about this.
You know what I like to do is, whenever you feel like going to, a fast food joint, which I've totally turned off the fast food thing, but go to a grocery store, and it's hard as hell to find something that, what would Jesus eat? You know, you need to have a bracelet on, WWJE. But I really do look at it like that. If not, what would Jesus eat? But what could have been found, 50 years ago? You know, most of the stuff in a grocery store was unattainable. Wasn't, something that you could find. Just for the record, just some ideas that are really cheap. Tuna fish at Walmart. If you get the Walmart brand of tuna, it's wild caught, so it's technically organic. And it's one of the few tunas that say wild caught on it. And wild caught anything, wild caught salmon, wild caught tuna is amazing because it actually is, well, one, it's what, we actually know that Jesus ate a lot of fish, but if it's wild caught, it retains all the stuff that is actually good for you and leaves out all the stuff that's really bad for you, because if you're eating fish that's been fed genetically modified corn or whatever they're feeding it, then it doesn't have the properties that make it healthy for you. So Walmart, I think 50 cents a can for tuna, and try to get off any kind of I'm just preaching about food here, but I do think it's important.
Write it down, so go ahead. Everybody else should be writing it down, too, if they don't already know.
Well, I mean, as far as it's really impossible to find anything, any drink that doesn't have fluoride in it. It's extremely important that if you don't have a Berkey water filter or some kind of reverse osmosis system that you know and have been told by the person selling you that it filters fluoride, then it doesn't filter fluoride, and that you are putting your spiritual life in jeopardy by the New World Order's design, and you have to get off fluoride immediately and pray that no damage has been done to you or your family from it. It's very dangerous. Look it up. Go anywhere. Fluorideaction.com. Read about the mounds and mounds and mounds and mounds and mounds of peer-reviewed scientific data showing this is harmful to just about every system in your body, and that there is no evidence to suggest that it's beneficial. It's a very deep, dark rabbit hole. If you haven't figured it out, figure it out quick. So buy spring water. You can get it, at Walmart. I hate to feed the beast, but Walmart spring water is way wicked cheap, and you can get... And make sure it's spring water. Don't get drinking water or purified water or Aquafina or Dasani or any of those, because it's just glorified tap water with fluoride in it. Spring water is your only hope. And be careful. Some of these companies are putting spring water fluoride in spring water, but I think that they at least label it, and they're trying to label it as a good thing. But you just to be double careful, you want to check their website. Certainly, if you have babies, get them off of Pedialyte and fluoride baby water. The two things that they say you're supposed to give your kid to drink is directly attacking your child by the Satanist world order. Aspartame is a neurotoxin, and it's known to be a neurotoxin put forth by Donald Rumsfeld, was the guy who had the government connections to get it through. If you don't believe me, check out a movie on Google Video, Sweet Misery. Check out the neurotoxin that aspartame is, and then compare it to what MSG is. MSG is in everything. Every Dorito, every cracker, just about, beef jerky. It's in everything every can of Campbell's soup, it's a neurotoxin intended to cause neurological problems. You can't trust anything. You have to read every single label. Genetically modified food is amazing. It's altering our DNA. Personally, I feel that they are altering our DNA through genetically modified food in order to, when they turn on whatever they're about to turn on with this EMF grid or any other grid, I think it has something to do with what they've done to our DNA or what they're trying to do with our DNA because of HARP being tuned to our DNA and other things that make me suggest it. But the bad thing about genetically modified foods is that in America and Canada, it's not a law to tell us what's genetically modified. So your best bet is to know what kind of things that they're genetically modifying, which is potatoes, which is rice is now contaminated in America, which it wasn't, because genetically modified food contaminates the neighboring crop, and then it's a point of no return situation. All corn, squash, and not to mention the pesticides and vegetables are all experimental, and farmers are being forced to put these pesticides that are doing very, very nefarious stuff to the vegetables, and they're not just to I mean, if you believe that they're trying to poison your kid with fluoride and aspartame, and that's the only thing they're telling you that you should give your child to drink, then you have to also believe that what they're putting in every single fruit and vegetable, unless it's organic, is also of that same genetic, you know, it's not good. So if you think you're eating all your fruits and vegetables, you may be doing exactly what the New World Order wants you to be doing. So you have to eat organic when it comes to vegetables. And it's very important to remember that if you're not putting live organic enzymes in your body, eating something raw, vegetable, fruit, some kind of raw enzyme, then you're dying. Then your body is not functioning the way God intended it to function. So you got to get live. So the main thing is mix it up. Get different kinds of enzymes in your body. Cod liver oil will change every system in your body. If you can find cod liver oil, it's the one, like, cure-all thing. I mean, I'm no, you know, expert on it, but cod liver oil, if you can find that stuff, it's in health food stores. It's in some grocery stores, but you want to check it in at a health food store. Okay, I think that's about it. Man, that was a little bit of rant. I guess I believe more strongly about that stuff than I thought I did, because I'm losing my voice here.
Yeah, but, you know, you got to do that once in a while. It's your show, so you should...
Hey, yeah, that's right.
Play.
All right. Well, I guess...
Let me just throw this out there. This is one of those things that a lot of people that listen to my show don't actually understand. These people, the New World Order, plans to kill you. They want people that are spiritually in tune with what they have in store for us. And, you know, when you have that, whatever that Georgia Stone thing is, saying that they want to knock the population down to 500,000, and we have the Book of Revelation basically telling us that 3/4 of the Earth's population is going to be killed by disease or famine or whatever, these people want you dead. So even if you don't think that this stuff is altering your DNA in a way that, you know, it's going to have something to do with some kind of a sci-fi beam that you don't necessarily believe, which I do and you do, but just, you know, if you're not willing to take that step, understand that these people have absolutely no problem with poisoning you, because they want you dead anyway. They want people like them to come into the New World Order. They want spiritually enlightened people. If you're a devout Christian and you're going to see through whatever ruse they throw at you, they don't want you there. You're just one less person that they have to send to a guillotine later on. So that's just my little tirade there.
You know, and I think that in that respect, I think that 9/11 was a blessing, because it made a lot of people realize that the government is trying and is at least willing to kill you. And if you can make that huge leap of faith, it doesn't matter if it's our U.S. government or some global government that we're marching towards that was possibly behind everything. It doesn't matter what. If you can make that leap of faith that the government is indeed and has killed in the past and will kill again, then you can at least start to distrust the government. Because unless you start to distrust your doctor and realize that your doctor has been indoctrinated in a system that has been built around something that it's not necessarily his fault. I mean, you have to make these huge leaps of faith, and that particular leap of faith that people have malevolent ideas about what they want to do with you and your family. And vaccines is a good way to suggest that. If you learn what to know about vaccines, then you will no longer have any doubts that there is no logic in that, except if you know about the Global 2000 documents. And you know that they are on record saying that they want to reduce the population and they're going to do it with vaccines. And no, they're not going to tell you about it. Because once you make that jump, then you're never going to take another vaccine in your life. And they're real, real, real serious about that. I'm very concerned about what they're doing with vaccines. I think it's a lot weirder than autism and retroviruses.
Yeah, absolutely. And then, you know, you've got scientists, and this is something that, you know, again, not really in the news. There have been Russian scientists and American scientists down in the Antarctic for years digging around. Now the Arctic Circle's melting, and everyone's in a rush to get up there. And they're talking already. You know, one of the first things that comes out is they're finding organisms that have been trapped in ice for thousands of years, that now they're reanimating them. And a lot of these things are viruses. A lot of these things are just different germs and things that they've, you know, there's one reason that governments get involved in this stuff, and it's not to learn how to cure cancer. It's to make bioweapons, you know? So whether or not that's something that they can use down the road, either just to wipe people out or to stick in food, shoot in your veins, God only knows. I mean, they have enough junk already to take us out. But just think about the things that they're finding now that we know absolutely nothing about.
Absolutely. Yeah, and, you know, especially when you realize that they are picked to rise to the top of a lot of different things because they have shown promise in that they don't have a conscience. I mean, I think that the reason you find pedophiles at the high levels of government and priests and anybody that is part of a control grid, the reason that they rose to the top positions and the reason that they all seem to be pedophiles up there is because if you exhibit signs of pedophilia, which is inherent in the system anyway, because you're being traumatized as a kid through all that stuff, it's very Aldous Huxley, Brave New World-like, where they're encouraged sexual play between kids and homosexual, sexual, and everything. And Aldous Huxley even talked about that. But they encourage that so that, I mean, they can bring somebody up that, A, they can blackmail because they have an appetite for, and you know, for this stuff, and they can take pictures of or whatever, so they have them in that way, and also they throw a lot of money at them, so it's such a bad decision for them to turn away from the system because, well, hey, I'm getting paid a lot of money, plus they got all this dirt on me. There's no reason I would ever turn away from this system. And then also it exhibits signs of low morality. If you're going to rape a little kid, then you're not going to have a problem poisoning my kids, you know, or whatever. So I don't have any kids, by the way, but if I did, you know, I don't know. I think that that's important to realize. I think people scratch their heads at that. You know, why does everybody seem to be gay in our government? Why is everybody, you know, why did the Franklin cover-up seem to implicate every single person in the government all the way to the top? You know, why? What's this Jeff Gannon thing? How come Blair and Bush seem to be, you know? I mean, what's the deal? I mean, it's crazy.
I love that Jeff Gannon thing. I absolutely love it. And, you know, I'm looking around, and you can find countless pictures of Bush kissing other guys.
Right.
Joe Lieberman or, you know, whoever. I mean, it's just really, like, what the hell is this? What is it? What is our president doing here? What is this?
Oh, yeah, you can see it in their eyes. You know, it's, when him and Blair get together, I think that they have some interesting board meetings in there.
Yeah, absolutely.
But yeah, I mean, it's nothing extraordinary when you realize the extent of the abuse that they went through as a child to create the altars. To, I mean, it's not, you know, people create multiple personalities occasionally on their own through being just run-of-the-mill abused as a child, because if you are sexually abused as a child, you generally create an altar to deal with the trauma, and so you are, you know, exhibiting a very basic form of multiple personality disorder, and it, you know, is to forget in a lot of different reasons. But there's a lot of psychology involved in that. But when you start to understand what they are doing to kids, that document I sent over to you earlier is just a total mind-blowing thing. But anyway, yeah.
Well, yeah, and then these people are, you know, yeah, they blackmail them. That's one part of it, and another part of it is these people are perpetuating the same, you know, the same, they're conducting themselves in a way that is, in essence, satanic. You know, this is just something that's disgusting, and it's going to spiritually harm these children. So, yeah, why not promote them? Hey, you're one of us. You know, you're a despicable person, and we welcome you with open arms.
Very interesting on that. If you ever get a chance, if you're on Google Video, type in K Griggs. That's K-A-Y-G-R-G-G-S, Griggs, K Griggs. And you'll find a very interesting tell-all about a lot of the connections that you will understand a lot of why people are pedophiles in higher-ups in military and other things like that. Very, very, very interesting. She's a Christian. I hope she's still alive, honestly, but that's an interesting thing to check into. Zeph Daniels actually did an interview. It was odd because I found Zeph a long time ago, hearing an interview that he did with her, and thinking, oh my gosh, because he was talking about how he was involved in the, you know, all this stuff that she was talking about, and I was like, man, I got to find out more about this guy, and then I just totally forgot about him and whatever. What do you think about him? He's a very interesting character, don't you think?
Yeah, he's off the wall sometimes. Some things I think he says are dead spot on. And other things, I don't know, I'm left like scratching my head. But
go ahead.
I encourage everyone to, you know, listen to as many different voices on this stuff as you can. So that, number one, you know, it's not just, you know, two of us screaming this stuff. But, so you know, everyone is used by God in a different way. And if he's of God, then, you know, there will be something, I believe something will come of it. You know, you'll have something revealed to you. And if he's not, then I go into everything like this. I pray. You know, I pray before coming on and doing this. I pray before I sit down to begin searching through the news and trying to understand what's happening and what the real story is behind the stories we get. And we have to go through life like that. We're exposed to so much, and you never really know. You know, you go to church, you don't know what your pastor's actual, his intentions are. He may be just the most wonderful man of God, or he could be some plant that's just there to, you know, a lot of Christians don't want to hear this, but there's a lot of pastors out there that don't believe a word of what they're saying. They're there because they're tax exempt, they get a free house, they get a nice salary, they get health benefits for their families. And it's a respectable way of life. And then there are other people that are there because they're plants. And they're there because they are sent on a mission to screw with you spiritually and screw with as many people spiritually as they can. And that's just something that most Christians today don't ever think about. And there's a reason why we see so many problems with the pedophilia in the Catholic Church. I mean, that's a whole other can of worms. But, you know, Christianity as a whole is painted with such a light that we're all morons, we're all stupid, and, you know, we're either back-ass hicks, child molesters, or just too stupid to understand that science is the only answer to everything. It's just so frustrating, but that's all part of the attack.
Right, but, you know, it's encouraging that apparently it takes a multi-pronged, no pun intended, or intended, rather, attack on us to keep us down. We are so, I mean, entire systems were created to keep the spirit of God down. I mean, you know, and he can. There's no way that they can stop us. I mean, God's winning this war, and he will continue. You know, I mean, he's the ultimate victor. It's just the way it's going to be. And I just encourage that they can't. They've underestimated the human spirit in so many different ways. They're going to win a lot of battles, but they've underestimated the power of God, and they've underestimated what they've got themselves into. And it's important for everybody that's listening to this to realize to banish fear from your life. Banish fear from death is the ultimate weapon against this. You have to banish fear from death for you and your family. You have to die in order to have life, and I think that if you can do that, if you don't know how to do that, then go to God and ask him to show you how to not be afraid of death or anything else, and then you can really you can really start an interesting journey, I think. Any final final words before we get out of here? I think we're right at 2.5 hours. I think we can make that a pretty fine podcast there.
All right. My final words would be just everyone. This, you know, as dark as this stuff sounds, it's all part of a message of hope and salvation. And take it to God. Focus on God. Focus on getting the Holy Spirit in you. And to a point where you are in constant communication with the Holy Spirit. It's the only way you'll be able to see through all of the lies and shenanigans that are going to be coming our way. And you need to be praying for your families. You need to be praying for other Christians. You need to be praying for people like us that are out there on the front lines. And you need to be praying for, you know, as crazy as it sounds, our leaders, you know. We don't know what the future brings, and we don't know what God's plans for people are. So, you know, pray for our president, pray for our vice president. I think they're both tools completely, but, you know, it's not for us to say who is to be saved ultimately and who's not. So, you know, my final words are just be in prayer with God and focus on Him, and don't worry about this stuff. You know, it's whatever God's plan is, it's going to be. And as far as fearing death, everyone dies. It's part of life. You know, I'm not going to say we shouldn't be uncomfortable about it, but we've been blessed to live in a time where death is something that, you know, is an infrequent event. But we're coming back into a time when it's not. And just, you know, focus on God and look to Him for all your answers and look to Jesus for just filling you up with the Holy Spirit so that you can be prepared for what's coming.
Everybody, please go to Frank's website, salvationrevelation.com, where you'll find his podcast and keep up with his articles. This guy is on fire, and he's a researcher to watch. Obviously, you've seen that here. Also, his network, not unlike MySpace for aware Christians, faithspeak.net. That's faithspeak.net. I'll try to interject this somewhere in the middle of the podcast because we got it. What's a way we can support you, Frank? I mean, is there anything you have out there for sale or donate? Is there a donate button on the Salvation Revelation site?
There's a donate button, but you know, the most support you can give is prayer. I've never asked for money from anyone. I have that there, just, you know, because we have to pay for the hosting and stuff, but I'm not saying give money, just pray, you know, that's all it comes down to. I think you would agree with that, you know, that's the most support we can have, and that's what's really important, and that's why I do this, and that's why you do what you do.
Absolutely. All right, everybody, if you want to check out some of the links and stuff, you can go to nowheretorun.podomatic.com, and I'll provide some of that there. Thanks for everybody. Remember, we're at the end of the world here, potentially, so yeah, we should start acting like it. Power to the people, and all glory to God.